that I am not dated this rule, evidently. I would not be comfortable to have material distributed here that have not passed here, that I have not seen. I'm not very comfortable with that.
With what?
But with that as it may, let's continue. And that, Yamkhwetse.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and committee members. My name is Manya Moroka.
My apologies.
Thank you, Chairman. My name is Manya Moroka, and I am the only team, so I came here representing myself. I do know that the committee also asked the department to come and be here to listen to the presentation I'm going to today to the committee. Thank you, Chairman.
The former Director General of Public Works. All right, thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I'm Sam Vukela, the acting DG in Public Works. I'm with my colleagues. I would suggest that they introduce themselves.
Chair, honorable members, my name is Kathy Mutsisi. I'm the Chief Financial Officer.
Good morning, Sumo Sahomi, Chief Director of Finance. Good morning, my name is Magdalene Shalalala from Asset Management.
Pramesh.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Pramesh Bana, Corporate Executive at the Auditor General. Chair, I have a fairly large team here today, so with your permission, I'll ask that they introduce themselves. It's both the regularity auditors as well as the investigation team.
All
right. Morning, Chair. I'm Caroline Mampuru, Business Executive for Investigations.
Morning, Chair. Francois Baird, Business Executive.
Morning, Chairperson. Lawrence Hansfield, Acting Business Executive.
Morning, Chair. Shabir Khan, Senior Manager.
Morning, Chair. Michael Rosa, Investigations.
Morning, Chair. Audrey Janssen van Rensburg, Manager, Investigations.
Good morning, Chair. Corey Criterius from Performance Auditing.
Morning, Chair. I'm Krishna Bhutta, also from Performance Auditing.
Thank you very much. May we then request members of Parliament to introduce themselves. We'll start here in Limpopo.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Sip Mutambi. I'm a member of SCOPA.
I'm Ishmael Malala, member of SCOPA.
Sarah Mayena, member of SCOPA Limpopo.
Tewela, Stamrao Tewiyan, Lelokola Komiti Yonai.
Good morning, Naren Singh, KZN.
A member of this committee, that's the important part of the KZN part.
Morning, Trevor Bonham, member of SCOPA.
From KZN.
Yeah.
Morning, Mark Steele, member of SCOPA, ditto.
From KZN.
Morning, Pete Pretorius, member of SCOPA, Western Cape.
Not from KZN. All right.
Morning, Mpumalanga is also represented from Kapelo Shilwane, member of SCOPA.
Okay.
Mandambili, South Africa.
Comrade Shilwane, can you switch off your mic? Yes, comrades.
Mwanile Kungubele, with Justice and Constitutional Development.
Thank you.
Mshien Sokone, the visitor to this committee meeting.
Okay. You are heartily welcomed, comrades. Heartily welcomed. Right.
We have two parts of our engagements today. The first part arises out of the hearing we had with the Public Works, where there were issues that we thought we had passed through smoothly, but it then transpired immediately thereafter that maybe things might not have been as clear as had been presented to us, in that related to the activities of the department, which happened during the tenure of the then DG, Mr. Manyi Moroka, had been explained to us as a committee by the officials. But somehow, Mr. Moroka felt very, very strongly that if he was around, he would have given a different version of what transpired. I must say that it took us quite some time, if you consider the time, the date when we had our hearing to date, for us to firstly agree that we need to reopen a part of that hearing so as not to prejudice the standing and integrity of a former official of the department. And in the interest of fairness and even-handedness, which is the hallmark of our work, we persuaded ourselves to have this engagement. But we felt it is only correct that the current managers of the department would also be here so that they could hear the clarifications. But also that if there are areas that they may need to talk to, they should be at liberty to do so. I must say that as a committee, we have now taken a firm decision that as far as possible, if we have a hearing where the person who was in charge is no longer in the employ of the department or the entity, we should endeavor to have that person here so that things are clarified at a go, instead of having this toing and froing. And I think people have noted with the Gender Commission that we had the former chairperson and the former CEO and the other acting CEOs being present so that they could assist us. But it was a lesson we learned long after we had passed Public Works. Thus, we had to take one or two steps back. I must indicate that, well, this is the first for us. So it is no precedent, either in terms of our practice and or even in terms of how we'll handle the process, because it's only a part of the total process that we're engaged in, and hoping that we're not going to get a flood of such requests. But also we've taken measures to cap that. Now, just at a process level, one, it is that we'll have this exchange with Mr. Moroka, after which we'll have our briefing from the Auditor General on CIPRO. Tombi, I hope it's in place. After the hearing, we'll have to disconnect the cameras for the purpose of the briefing. Because as you know, our briefing is a closed session, closed to everybody except members of the committee and the staff. So once we're done here, we're going to have our closed session to get the briefing, and that will be making our day for today. Now, I want to come to Mr. Moroka.
Well, we've afforded this opportunity, sir, so that you can, as you indicated in your letter, seek to clarify a few things around this one particular matter. Now, what we're going to do, we'll afford you an opportunity to talk to us in relation to those issues. I've seen the presentation that you have prepared. I think that it is, I would rather you talk to it rather than present it. But dealing with the pertinent issues and answering the question or clarifying the issues. The department in this presentation left us with an impression that you, in your position as the Director General, entered into a contract with Servcon and Interside in a way that was unorthodox, and that since then there has been a dispute around payment between the department and the entities concerned, in part because, or in large measure because of the quality of work that has been done, but also raising issues around how the entire contract came into being. And we from our side had recommended that charges should be investigated against you for having landed the department in a contract of that magnitude without following due process. And I think it was that element that led to your immediate protestation same day that this is not it. So we're here today. Our schedule is full, as would have appreciated your numerous inquiries, but we've made time and we hope we'll fruitfully use this time. I think what I would urge you to do is to give us the facts as you know them and leave it at that. If members of the committee have issues or questions to raise around that process, I've given them the submission that you gave me so that they can have full background of what it is that you want to present, and then we can take it up from there. Right? I'm handing over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson, and members of the committee, and I must from the onset indicate my humbleness for affording me that opportunity. And the Chair, you captured it quite correctly, that hearing that there will be a prosecution process followed when certain administrative, legal, and financial issues have not been exhausted prompted me to come and make this presentation. The presentation has been circulated, and also attached to it is just a template that actually provides the facts that I'll be talking to, so that you also have on record what is, so the document, the two relate. It's just that the finer details are in the template itself, and that's why it will also be beamed on the screen there at an appropriate time. It looks at the Auditor General's report, period 3 March 2009, DG's report, response to that report, 6 March 2009, ministerial comments on a memo that was circulated earlier regarding what was recommended.
I think let's do this. I would prefer that you talk to process,
yes,
as reported by the officials.
All right.
The issue of the Auditor General's report at the hearing did not arise. It was not, in my recollection, was not a key factor, was not a factor. So tell us process that would actually say from your side, no, I did nothing wrong, and then we leave it at that.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the pertinent issues for this engagement are captured in the presentation itself. We will look at my period 1 April 2007 to 2 April 2009. the aspect on irregular expenditure, the decision from what we call our MINMEC, the Department of Public Works National Intergovernmental Forum, and one would ideally label the scope of pilot, whether or not I acted outside the limitations imposed by the pilot program or not. The written authority in terms of the PFMA from EA, executing authority, to the Director General in terms of Section 64. And I'll explain the difference, the contravention of the PFMA, the role of officials in terms of Section 45, my and role in terms of Section 38 of the PFMA. The AG report only those parts, the legality, the rights of the DG, including Section 196 of the Constitution, and Section 84 of the PFMA in terms of processes that were supposed to be followed period December 2008 to the period of my departure on the 2nd of April. There's also another matter which basically was of conflict of interest, my relationship to the entity, the cash payment that I received without my prior knowledge, processes explanation, and whether or not there was contravention in terms of the Public Service Act, Section 31.1. The topics will cover that. There's another aspect that is also important, how it led that SAFCON be appointed, including both SAFCON and Interside, the presentation to MINMEC, the technical work performed by officials period May 2007 to December, the date of signing of the service level agreement, the intention of MINMEC, the appointment of SOEs without following competitive bidding, deviation from competitive process, non-withdrawal of DG from procurement policies to processes to appoint SAFCON, condoning irregular expenditure, reporting thereof, signing of SLAs, the amount 223 million, which even that time vis-a-vis the budget of 30 million set aside for this process, and the cash incentive and so forth. How it all started, it was the implementation of government removable asset management, GIAMA.
Dr. Murok, I said, you know, we had no precedent, and I'm sure that might be our difficulty starting. I would personally have preferred a situation where, because the details that you're giving, in as much as they might be relevant, but they are preemptive, I would want you to say, in relation to the hiring of SAFCON and Interside, this is what happened, this is what I did, these were the basis and the conditions under which I did that. I think that is the key issue, because our decision to say no, there is something wrong that we have done, was on the basis that we felt processes had not been followed. I'm just saying, because you see, you are going to make a presentation, I'm sure we're going to interact with that. So I would think that it would be better for us if you just briefly say, this is what I did, this is how I did it, and you leave it at that.
Okay, Chairperson, I'm going to try and do that, but I was hoping to do that presentation as quickly as under 15 minutes. It was not going to be too long.
All right.
Chairperson, the presentation to the committee articulated a need to audit all state-owned assets within the financial year 2007/08. We also outlined to the MINMEC committee a minuscule budget of 30 million over three financial years, 10 million apiece for each financial year. The choice between whether or not we should go the route of private consents or the state-owned entities, realizing the cost-benefit analysis and looking at the requirements of Section 33 and Section 39. I will explain when questions are why I'm referring to those. The agency to perform premised on a directive from the Accountant General that we, by the end of the financial year, we must have accounted for all the state-owned entities. We should stop referring to approximately 110,000, 130,000, but we must be precise on that. And the reason, and in the end, MINMEC appointed the SOE and directed the department to look at legal admin processes and financial processes should be embarked upon before the signing of the SLAs. The written directive will also be referred to.
My apologies. I said this is uncharted water.
Thank you, Chair.
So they will from time to time be glitches.
Thank you, Chair.
Alright.
Then there was the issue of the fact that they were both 100% SOEs. Now, we looked at 30 million and the fact that we were supposed to audit and what. The department, the administration side and the asset branch had indicated that to audit each property would cost 4,600, and I think it amounted to somewhere in the region of 500 million, half a billion. They were also asked to verify with the two SOEs, that is Interside or Cercon, if they were to perform the function on incidental costs, how much would it be? And they said it would be 1,596. We looked at the savings and implications of the PFMA and the constitutional obligations in terms of that relevant section that you are allowed to use state-owned entities to perform certain tasks to Cercon. The fact that they had immediate capacity and they had a budget to perform on that. The willingness to perform until such time that the department had a budget to pay for their costs. And when that decision was made and it has been acknowledged, and in terms of even what the documents that are there, that it was for a pilot, and that pilot program unfortunately had no limitations. But I'll also explain what it happened. The appointment of SOEs without following competitive bidding and deviation from the competitive process, and by the DG, Chairperson, perhaps I should go and look at Section 38.1 of the PFMA stipulates what the responsibility of the accounting officer is, and you will note that I'm supposed to look at the constitutional, must ensure that the department trading entity constitute has and maintains appropriate procurement provisions, which is fair, equitable, transparent, competitive, and cost-effectiveness. If you look at the fact that when MINMEC appointed the two entities, it was looking at the fact that we would not be able to perform this task with the 30 million that we had. We would not be in a position to secure funding from Treasury, hence the request of that. Now, the minute of MINMEC has been signed, and in terms of the PFMA, that minute is in writing. It can constitute an executive authority directive to the accounting officer. The PFMA says in writing. It does not say in writing, it should be a letter from Minister to the DG, specifically on that. It does not. It's quite broad, hence the need to highlight the legality around that aspect itself. Both entities disqualified to be referred to as competitive bidders because they are not there for profit making. They are not private concerns. They are state-owned entities, and the Constitution allows. Section 41 of the Constitution says you can look at those issues, cooperating one another in mutual trust and good faith, fostering friendly relations, assisting and supporting one another. And that's the whole idea around MINMEC, informing one another and consulting one another on matters of common interest and how to go about it, coordinating their actions and legislation with one another and adhering to processes. I'm on page 5 of the other document that explains to the MINMEC. The conventional procurement order was issued by the Constitution. If a conventional procurement was issued, it's informed by the following chairperson. One is that you have a budget, you then publicize a tender. And on the basis of that tender, you appoint private concerns. In this instance, we never appointed any private concerns. And the deviation was in a way ratified by the written directive in a form of a minute from the MINMEC institution itself. The other aspect which is very important is the part of whether or not there was fruitless and irregular expenditure in terms of the interpretation of Section 38.1 of the PFMA. In this instance, there was no irregular, no unauthorized or irregular expenditure, as again the Min-Mec Minet refers. The appointment of two holy instances. I have to repeat this over and over because it's a process issue, Chairperson, and there may be various interpretations by other people. It should also be noted that during the deliberations and decision making of the Min-Mec, the Chief Financial Officer and the officials were present, together with the relevant Chief Directorate in his branch, including supply chain management, equally formed part of the technical team, operations, asset management, to translate the decision of Min-Mec. And they had 7 months to do that, to look at whether or not is it within the PFMA or not, and whether or not the Director General, as the accounting officer, can ultimately sign the service level agreement, which was done 7 months down the line. It is evident that both Intersight and CEFCON are not private concerns, and therefore not falling within the scenario of making them compete against each other and claiming that they are not competitive in terms of that. The deviation... The deviation from competitive processes was captured in that line. The non-withdrawal of the DG from procurement processes to appoint CEFCON. CEFCON is 100% SOE. Clearly, I had no business interest in CEFCON. I was appointed director of CEFCON, I think, on the 1st of November 2002, a position I held until December 2009. When I was appointed the director general of the department, I was asked by the Minister of Housing to continue as Director of CEFCON because of certain transformation processes that were occurring at CEFCON and Tubelisha at that time. And the two issues were discussed between the two executive authorities. And clearly there was no conflict of interest. And I'll explain again later in terms of why do I say there was no... Let me just check this here, check. The AG in a meeting. Okay, tell you, you mentioned that I must not even capture that one. In terms of why I acted in that. You sort of restricted me on a number of issues, Jefferson, and I don't know whether you'll allow me to finish in the 15 minutes. Without you, I will not dwell too much into the Auditor General's report, but I will from time to time indicate that. Condoning irregular expenditure, there was never any irregular expenditure, incidental processes within the department. AG officials in January 2009, however, when we met them, there's a document. I met the Auditor General's officials for the first time on the 27th of January. 2009. And in that meeting, unfortunately, they only recorded my verbal presentation in terms of the report they gave me. But I went on to provide a response to that report 3 days later to indicate my standing in terms of where I am in terms of irregular expenditure or not. And that report as well is captured in terms of the presentation that is made here today. In the report itself, Chairperson, I alluded to the fact that it's not an irregular expenditure because it comes from Min-Mec. And they themselves said, I must just prepare a letter and inform Min-Mec, the National Treasury, that in fact it is an irregular expenditure. Now, if you look in the PFMA itself and you look what constitutes irregular expenditure, it's like if you've appointed private concerns, and you later realize that you do not have a budget for that. You then have to ask Treasury for permission to deviate from the budget that has been appropriated to accommodate that. In this instance, it had nothing to do with that. Secondly, Chairperson, the service level agreement that was signed in December 2009 is very conditional, that you go and perform the function, but you'll only be paid when there is funding and or when the executing authority does violate in terms of Section 43 and or when the department goes to Treasury to seek more funding in terms of that. Therefore, there could have been no way that we contravened the Section 311G was not contravened in that aspect. The signing of SLA, 222 million, vis-à-vis the 30 million and the expenditure incurred. Chairperson, the reason why I highlighted when I was appointed in the department and all of that is because I wanted to indicate that of that 223 million committed to state-owned entities, in the two-year period that I was there, it was never no payment of that. And as far as I'm concerned, if there was payment done, I would not know. But there was a time when I engaged with the department when there was a publication in one of the newspapers around May when a certain member of this committee, I think, I don't know whether it's Mr. Potricker of the DA, was asking about an investigation that I then responded.
We don't have Potricker.
Sorry, the DA, I know his face, he's seated right across. I know him, I remember him from TV. He's seated right across the Jackson.
We are still in Pretoria.
My humble apologies, Chairperson.
That's fine.
Is that the money was like that? Now you go to the written expression from EA to myself. The 222 million was in line with that. There were no limitations placed on the scale of the pilot program. The pilot program did not say, go and spend 5 projects and come back. And I will explain why I'm saying this. If you look from the 25th of May and you push all the way to even the time when we went for the budget speech of the minister the following year and the appearances before committees, the department kept on providing MINMEC with feedback on implementation of the SLA. And the department kept on telling MINMEC that it is 223 million and the project allocated as follows for CEFCON and Interside. At no stage did members of MINMEC say, we object, accounting officer. You have gone outside the ambit of your limitations in terms of the 223 million. Even at top management, now there's a meeting from the department itself, and there's a meeting between the department and the minister being the executing authority. The reporting was there, and it's also in writing, where the department kept on referring to the 223 million, and the reason why we say it's not irregular. Delays in administrative processes led to delays in seeking environments and or funding from NT because not a cent was spent. The 30 million itself had not been spent by the time I left the department. So there was still no need to even go and ask for more money when in fact the money that was budgeted had not even been spent. Chairperson, I think with that, I will come to the end of the first part in the explanation in terms of irregular expenditure and everything, and when question time comes, I will write those. Chairperson, there's also an issue of, you know, when we motivated for the appointment of the two state-owned entities, I might have had some kind of conflict of interest because for some reason, for unrelated issues to those of public works, and without my knowledge, without anything, there was a cash incentive injected into my bank account without my knowledge by the entity for work done not related to public works. And I think the whole commotion now was it is as if it's 223 million, therefore it's payback time for 215,000, Chairperson, which in terms of percentages constitute no less than 0.001% of 223 million. And I think that's how cheap I am in terms of compromising my entire. And I will show you why I say there could not have been any way in terms of that. The cash incentive was decided by CEFCON board without my knowledge. The cash incentive had nothing to do with public works and or CEFCON SLA. Explanatory letter was submitted by CEFCON, and I shared it with my honorable DDG of corporate services at that time, in January, long even before, with the DDG to say, I now have a letter, and I learned that in my account there's an amount of 161,000 deposited, and for now, for purposes of not knowing, I'll keep it in a money market account and I will not use a cent of it. And he said, because you did not know, you have to keep it and wait until the 31st of March when you do financial disclosure in terms of Public Service Act, and that process was followed. And on the 31st of March 2009, I then submitted it and it went to the Department of Public Service. in terms of that. Now, Chairperson, if you look at the cash incentive issue when it was discussed, submitted together with the DG's initial response as well, there was the first initial report. And when I saw that initial report, I went to the minister and said, Minister, the issues that we are discussing in terms of the Auditor General are issues which, I'm not going into detail, are issues which I believe are administrative, and I'm going to clarify them. And because I was headhunted for Public Works, I wanted to leave in September, I could not. As soon as I've clarified all these issues, I am going to leave. But the irregular expenditure, this is where I stand, the cash incentive, this is where I stand, and the minister gave me a nice response and said, align it to the processes of the Auditor General. And I'll come back to why I'm saying this. The minister only noted that. Now, if, for an example, I had contravened Section 31(1) of the Public Service Act, which says if you have prior knowledge that you are going to receive money and you work and you are in the employer of state, you must seek authority from the executing authority that I'll be receiving money. So I did not contravene that section. And I do know for a fact that the minister consulted the PSC to see whether or not a disciplinary action against me can be instituted. And upon hearing that it's an incentive that I did not know, it changed the scenario. Hence, for the 4 months period, there was no disciplinary action instituted, and I'll explain again that part. Chairperson, the DG's resignation from state had nothing to do with the cash incentive. It is my own belief and my own assessment in terms of where it came from. If I look at the fact that we were supposed to beef up the financial management unit, and at that time I was asked to look at it, because in any legal matter, in any administrative court, there's motive. There's motive for people believing I received a cash incentive to give work to someone. But also there is motive on my part that for this thing to unravel the way it was unraveled. The mistrust between me and my former executing authority is only as a result of 3 or 5 issues unrelated to this. One is refusal to provide in November, December, an issue.
Let's not go into
that. Okay, I will jump that.
Yeah, sure.
And the purpose and limitations, Chairperson, if you hear from the newspaper, unfortunately, that you are to be charged on irregular expenditure, which was captured in the Auditor General's report, I have to also look at that and say, the Auditor General report, which you will discuss at some point in time, was discussed. It's irrelevant, Chair.
No,
not the contents. I'm just on the process.
No. I'm saying that the outcome of our hearing was not premised on the report of the Auditor General. So that should not, at this stage, the report of the Auditor General should not come. Actually, that there was a report of the Auditor General, I first knew it when I got the submission from you. I didn't even know about it. So I'm saying, in terms of what transpired until today, the Auditor General's report did not feature. And it is not the basis of having you here. I'm just trying to secure process. No, we'll talk to that very, very fully. But I'm just saying, at a process level, at this stage, let's not preempt processes.
Yeah, Chairperson, it's just that my own intelligence has told me that there are other incidental and legal processes falling on the sidelines. And they will be guided largely by the recommendation of SCOPA of the 9th of March. And that's why I'm just left with 3 slides. That is why I wanted to touch on those things, because at a later stage, they will come back, and they will come back and have serious implications of me. Those processes are only informed by what transpired from SCOPA. It is what one would arguably say is the legal basis for people doing certain things like this. But be that as it may, and the Chairperson does not want to, because that's the only relation that I wanted, and my humble plea to you, Chair. I will not go into the report as you are. But I will, from time to time, as somebody who is legally qualified, and who knows when things do go, I've represented more than 5,000 individuals, Chairperson, in my career as a lawyer. I do know that you will be asked what prompted you to go that route at some point in time. And that's why I wanted to ask you humbly, just to indicate this process. I will not touch on the report.
Okay. No, you see, DJ, although I'm aware that you're about to finish, but just to make sure that we always keep the correct line. All we wanted to get, well, so far we've got the information plus all the additionals, just to say what happened. What processes do you follow? What informed those processes? And because the report and the investigation by the Auditor General came after you had acted. So the explanation of what you did before the Auditor General came should have, at this stage, have nothing to do with the Auditor General. That might come in the process of questioning, but in your presentation, it should not overlap to 2009 when we're talking about what factually happened from MINMEC up until appointment or
something. Chairperson, in that case, I will then move to the last slide.
Sure.
And indicate in the last slide why I requested to claim my name before the committee. But I never at any stage contravened any section of the PFMA. And the reason why the executive authority never instituted a case against myself in terms of the PFA and or in terms of the Constitution, Section 196, including Section 84 of the PFMA. And I was going to read in terms of which particular part of that section. That I equally never at any stage contravened Section 31 of the PFA, and the fact that the Minister of Public Works never instituted any action against the DG, nor did he seek legal process whilst I was still in the employ of the department. In the document I sent through to you, in terms of that, is that the there's an important aspect which whatever you do in writing sometimes follow you. It's page 29 of the DG's report to my minister regarding explanation on the two issues. I asked that the problems encountered in the department must be subjected to administrative and legal scrutiny so as to confirm with the factual facts on whether or not there was irregular expenditure on my part, and that I totally dispute any wrongdoing on my part in terms of whether or not there was a legitimate authority by the executive authority to award issues to those state-owned entities. The recommendation reads, the DG was afforded an opportunity to respond, and that is the purpose of the submission. I do not agree with the recommendation as stated. So in other words, at an appropriate time when I'm given an opportunity to discuss the Auditor General's report, I will talk about the limitations and the issue that my constitutional rights will be impaired if I'm not afforded to that thing. But however, I've explained the status on the irregular expenditure, I've explained the status on the cash flow, on the cash incentive. I've also wanted to reiterate that this presentation is limited to period 2 April 2007 to period 2 April 2009. That scope, I accept my presentation as a true reflection of related administrative, legal, and financial processes.
Thank you, Dr. Morok. I appreciate that the difficulty would have been there, you know, to not talk to the other issues that have subsequently unfolded and worsened by the intelligence that you have, which we do not have, unfortunately. But I think what we wanted was just what happened. And quite clearly, this is not, we didn't call you to come and debate with the Auditor General about what is right and what is wrong. It's between you and the committee. The Auditor General is purely incidental, and any reference to the report of the Auditor General will merely be to seek guidance. But at the end of the day, as a committee, we'll make our own decision in terms of what happens. And our interaction here is not going to produce a separate report, but we're going to have one report on the Department of Public Works, because that's what we're dealing with. And this might just be a paragraph or a line, you know, in the totality of the whole report. So we're not taking it as some special hearing out there that must have its own special, you know, outcomes. So our focus is very limited. And having made your presentation, Tate Moroko, if you can disconnect it from that side, so that everyone can be focused now on our engagement. Now, I think in your presentation, there are four issues that you clearly spoke on, and which I think when one looks at the report of the Auditor General, I think it is also divided into four sections. And for that purpose, as we always do, you recall you appeared before the committee when you were still DG, we divide our work into focus areas so that we don't find ourselves all over and be unsystematic. As the program before you states, if you have it, copy of the program. Tommy. All right. I see that even the acting DG does not have a copy. So, Tommy, if you have an extra copy, please. So I will hand over to Comrade Malale to kickstart the process. But like I indicated, we are not here to discuss the report of the Auditor General with the DG, former DG per se. We're dealing with the issues, and the reference to that report is merely to guide and assist, noting that this report was done for the minister. It was not tabled in parliament. It was the minister requested this work to be done for him and for his consumption. And that subsequent to having these copies from Mr. Manyi, we were able to get a copy from the minister just to authenticate and confirm. And there was agreement from the minister that references can be made, or we can look into the report for purpose of our engagement. And the fact that it was not tabled does not in any way impact on its factual basis. I'm just indicating that it was not tabled in Parliament because it was done for the minister. Comrade Mala?
Sir, I think earlier on you indicated that we are serving in self-con. Can you just list that period for us? Just to list the period in which you served.
Okay. The period I served at self-con is 1 November 2002 to December 2009.
Just to confirm, so during that period, you initially served as the managing director of Servcon. Then you resigned later on, on or about March 2007. Then you continued to serve in the board as a non-executive board member. And you also served in the audit committee of this structure during the financial year 2008-09.
Well, I don't have details around that, but I do know the committee that I was heading was the remuneration committee, and I must have attended one or two meetings. I remember that year, my attendance to the self-con board meeting was not satisfactory. But I don't have those details.
But you were the chairperson of the subcommittee on finance, on remuneration committee.
That's correct.
I want to suggest to you that in the report of SEPCON, Holy Solutions, you are recorded as also being served in the, just with a colleague, in the...
In which page? Because
I will make reference. I will make reference, Chairperson. So it means you agree with what is mentioned on page 17 of the SEPCON annual report,
which year?
For the year 2009, that is 2009 annual report.
Page
17. You are mentioned there as having been their managing director. You really agree with the content thereon. Under independence of the board, you can see.
Previously?
Yes, previously. Yes.
That's correct.
And on top there, that you were a former managing director and so on.
That's correct.
On the following page there.
Just keep your mic on.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Which is 18. It shows that you are now the chair of the Remuneration and Finance Committee in that particular financial year.
Just keep your mic on as well.
Okay, that's correct.
And indeed, your photo also appears there on page 20.
As a director.
Okay. As a director there. I just want to confirm just a few aspects in relation to that. On page 43 of the report, just towards the end there, there is a company referred to as Omega Process Servers. Do you know any other director of SEPCON who served this company?
No.
Have you ever served this company yourself?
Correct.
So you don't know any other director except yourself who actually is a member of Omega Process Servers?
Who worked for SEPCON?
Yeah.
I don't know that.
Okay.
Don't rest your case. I'm not a judge.
No.
Take it to the logical
conclusion. No. I don't know. I just wanted to understand that. That's fine. Those are the few things in terms of this report, which I wanted to confirm, and I'm glad that you really helped us a bit. You actually wrote a report. The minister, a report to the minister this one. DG response to AG.
These are the documents that you sent to me.
Yes, the document the chair said I was not to send.
So the date.
Well, at that point, because I wanted to make your initial presentation.
Okay. So I was going to cover some of them.
Now, in terms of your slides there, you mentioned
you,
that
just
you
a
wrote,
minute. Can you be able to connect?
I don't think we need to
connect. What I'm doing there is the questions are already typed.
Okay, that's fine.
So no.
Take a step, all right?
Yeah, not yet a step. I'm saying you must type there on his laptop. Yes, not
and they must
sure.
Come
on.
Okay. You must just disconnect. That's 1 minute.
Sure.
But you can go out. Which page?
No. I just want to confirm. You see, on our slide, on the first slide, apparently, we are mentioning dates saying a response of the DG to the AG dated the 6th March 2009, and it would actually refer to the date that is captured in the report.
Yes.
And the response of the minister, you referred to Mr. Deutsch, and in fact, the date 18th March 2009 is the date as reflected on this report.
Yeah. What you have in front of you is the root form.
Is the root form.
And the report, yes, in terms of his comments on page 29.
On page 29, yes. Now, on page 12 of this report, which I take is your report, you indicate that the accounting officer deemed that process to be adequate as that's the last paragraph that I'm reading, in response to the auditor's report. You are saying that the accounting officer deemed that process to be adequate as public entities would be used and non-conventional competitors as espoused by the Auditor General, and the fact that the Department of Public Works did not have enough budget save for the 30 million. And this accounting officer, you are referring to yourself, can we agree on that?
Chairperson, that's correct. But then are we going now into the Auditor General's report?
No, Chair, he's entitled to react without any limitations. Because it really needs to reflect on him. He's entitled to respond.
No. We're not going into the Auditor General's report. You will be raising issues. If there's a reference, the Auditor General's report is just a reference. But the point is a standalone point and not the report per se. But if it's a quotation from the report which he believes to be factual and you think differently, you will be entirely entitled to react to it.
Yeah, what I'm saying, Chair, is that I'm referring to his own response.
No, I understood.
No,
what he's trying to check is that the accounting officer refers to you.
It's yes, sir.
Sure.
It's just that I wanted the committee to note that we've also dropped into it. But it's okay. It's yes.
Now, in your initial presentation, you stated categorically clearly that the minister appointed subcon in terms of minutes of Minmen. Should I take that to be a statement?
I'd like to elaborate.
You're entitled to do so.
I said the PFMA says for you as accounting officer to have an authority to appoint an entity, you need executive authority written expression. And because the definition in PFMA is not specific, I related in writing to mean the MINMEC minutes. Have been my directive some 56 days after my
All right.
So that is correct.
Okay. If I may just ask, the minutes of MINMEC, are they usually audio recorded?
Yes, they are.
And there are also minutes that are produced in writing.
Correct. Not only did I rely on minutes as well,
they
are recorded,
yes, and signed by
the minister.
By the minister.
And, yes, and you need to read those minutes.
Follow up.
Yes, they are.
That's really how the committee.
They are recorded.
Yes. Now, the minutes that the Auditor General received when were unsigned by the minister. By the way, which minister are we talking about here?
Former Minister Tokoti Tiza. And I need to explain something here. One is that the minutes of MINMEC are not my minutes. They are the minutes of the minister. And they are signed by the minister.
No, I'm just putting to you that the minutes that are submitted to the AG were unsigned by the minister. What is your reaction to that? I'm not saying whose minutes are they.
I wouldn't be in a position. I've not had any time to go and look at documentations within the department. But the good news is the secretary of the MINMEC in his year, Adam Dombin, I saw him around here, he would be in a position to say which minutes were signed. But as far as I'm concerned, there was a meeting on the 25th of May, and there was a follow-up meeting sometime in July and another one in August. And all those minutes were adopted by MINMEC. Sometimes they don't adopt them the following meeting, they do it the other meeting. Therefore, the adoption in terms of the recording is there. So the minutes of 25 May were adopted because there's a departmental policy that we implemented called the BE on Transformation of Properties. Came from that meeting. So they were adopted. So whichever one the AGs have, I would not be in a position to know which one did they get.
Okay, fine. Who identified Safquan?
Sorry?
Who identified Safquan?
Who identified
Housing Solutions as a company that must be preferred for this particular...
Safquan is not a company in terms of a private concern.
I understand what is your position on that.
Secondly, Chair.
No, answer my question.
No, no.
I understand.
Yes, Chair. Let's do this. I think the number of the substance of the question is who identified or recommended that Safquan should be the entity used for this particular purpose.
Yes.
I think that is the substance.
It's such a pity that I was not allowed to. There's a presentation that was made to MINMEC.
By who?
By the Director General, which is
public
myself.
Yes. All right.
Yes. And I want to explain, because you can't just qualify it as one question. The Director General indicated to MINMEC that the experience located in Safquan is the only one he knew at the time of an entity of state that can audit state assets. And its capacity and its budget can be tapped into. Collapsed to that was the recommendation that Intersite with the same status must be linked. So the identification came from the fact that, yes, it's myself.
Okay.
It's a state entity and it's not a private concern.
We understand that very well. Now, you recommended that Safquan is the institution that you know has got the skills, the capacity, the experience, and the necessary budget to execute the project of that magnitude.
Correct, the incidental. And that was also added with Intersite. The same sentiments were captured for Intersite.
Now, you are also the person who ultimately signed the service level agreement.
After it had been technically looked at for 7 months by the officials, yes.
And in the service level agreement, you stated the amount of assets that must be processed by Safquan.
I think issues around the service level agreement might be falling under steel.
Yeah, it's fine. Just that aspect for us.
Okay. Chairperson, can I just note this?
Yeah.
That the questions that are being asked, I'm again saying so, they are questions that are trying to determine motive. And I've not been afforded the opportunity to explain some of these things in detail. These are not questions that are asked to clarify. These are questions that are trying to do a linkage between what transpired and what. And I'm sure as somebody who understands the right to remain silent, these are questions outside of the scenario.
No, let's do this. I think, Dr. Morok, if at the end of the process you have a sense that there are issues that if left unclear from your side, might perpetuate a perception that you believe is wrong, I'll give you the opportunity to do so. But let's allow the questions to... Yes.
I think, Chair, it's only fair that in his responses, he should be entitled to say whatever he needs to say, as long as it is relevant to the question. I think that is fair for me. I really would not object to any sort of response that he gives. The only thing I wanted to ask you, listen to the service level argument, relates to the fact that he had signed that, and he agrees with me on that. And in this service level agreement, it was specifically stated as to how many, properties will be dealt with by CELCOL and those that will be dealt with by Interscience.
That's correct.
And in terms of the computation of all these amounts, they really came to 223 million rands. And the only amount that was in the budget was only 30 million rands.
Can you repeat that question?
The only amount in the budget was 30 million rands.
Mm-hmm.
And as a DG, you are aware of that situation at the time.
I am aware, but I'm also aware that in the very same level agreement, service level agreement, there are conditions. There were conditions that it is a state-owned entity with a budget to go and perform work, and at such and such a time, when the department has money, it will pay for the incidental cost incurred by a state-owned entity.
I wouldn't want you to go deeper into the funding aspect. Mutambi will deal with that.
Okay. Let me not be excited by that. She's my colleague. I'm at SLM areas that I'm not coming. I wanted to ask. I'll go back to the process of supply chain management.
Sure.
You stated that you did not feel it was necessary that you must undergo a formal public tender process.
Chairperson, I instituted a written directive from MINMEC and the executive authority to appoint state-owned entities. But prior to doing so, we subjected the decision of MINMEC to admin, legal, and financial interrogation by the officials for 7 months to look at compliance issues. 7 months down the line, they came back to the accounting officer to say all is well in terms of you can sign. Remember, the service level agreement was not prepared by myself. It was prepared by my officials in legal, finance, and administration. And yes, I also looked at it to see whether or not it meets the directive from that. So it had been also clear. It's unfortunate I don't have it in front of me.
Did you have at the time a supply chain management system?
Yes, it is there. And the supply chain management chief director was part of the technical team. The CFO was part of the meetings of MINMEC. He was fully aware of what transpired.
So the supply chain management system did provide you with powers to appoint a tender on the basis of MINMEC.
It's not a tender, Chair. It was not a tender. It was services award. So that's why I'm saying, the interpretation of words is very key. It was not a tender. It was a directive to a state-owned entity. We've got examples. We've got CSIR, we give them money. We've got IDT, we give them money. Through some of the minutes from that, there are precedents across the government where work is given to a state-owned entity to perform. And it's regarded as work in terms of the constitution. That's why I'm saying the interpretation of how it was done. It's bigger than us here.
So your understanding is that there was a contractual relationship between CELCOL, Interscience, and the department to the tune of 2 to 3 million rands.
Under strict conditions stipulated in the service level agreement.
Which conditions were those?
They were conditional. That because you have a budget, you've got the capacity, you've got the skill, help us out. The money we have, we cannot go out and issue a tender to ask for private consents to come and do the work. You have the capacity, you have the money, please help us out. That is why, Chairperson, from that period up until now, I don't know, I'm not in the department anymore, but as far as I'm concerned, and the time I left, not a cent was paid to those entities, and as far as I know, there is no legal implication on our part. Even if the money is not paid, but the only thing it does, it affects the government institution, not a private concern. So if that's why I'm saying it was not a tender. If it was a tender, I would be before a court of law being sued, together with state, saying, you pay the private concern, you ask to perform work. I did not ask them to perform work on the basis of the 30 million. It was not me.
Now, you stated that you recommended Servcon because it had the capacity on its own to execute a project of this nature.
Servcon and Intersight, the departmental officials in the same meeting collapsed to my presentation, Intersight. So the recommendation was for two entities,
okay,
not only Servcon. The only thing that was not there was that the technical aspect by Intersight were delayed, purely because on their side. That is why somewhere along the line people wanted to say only Servcon was appointed. That is not true.
Okay.
Chairperson, may I also indicate that I did my rounds in terms of the people who were at MINMEC. There were six MECs plus the executing authority. I have secured three affidavits from the MECs that were there. And the reason I did not secure the one from the executing authority is because I was coming with her. It was only short notice yesterday that I was informed that she's not coming. To clarify some of those things, the members that were there, that confirmed, in fact, that they gave me a directive, and I've got copies of those three of them. I was going to do the other four. Seiso Mahai, MEC for Free State. Madala Masuku, MEC for Mpumalanga. Lydia Johnson, MEC for KZN. General Begitele, MEC for KZN. MEC Marius Fransman, MEC David Mulusi, and lastly MEC Howard Yawa. I have secured the affidavits of MEC Yawa, MEC Mohai, and MEC Mulusi. Because of a short notice, because I had to drive to those places using my own car, I thought I would do those later. I can also read it, because it's important that I must read it. It reads as follows. I confirm, and I was present in the Public Works Forum, also known as Minister and what, on the 25th of 2007, that approved the appointment of the two state-owned entities, Servcon and Intersight, to provide asset verification condition assessment on behalf of Department of Public Works and respective provincial departments of public works. The department under the leadership of Director General Manyama Moroka was tasked to address pertinent administrative issues and ensure a service level agreement is concluded with both state-owned entities as soon as possible. The department was also directed to ensure that prior to concluding respective service level agreements, both Servcon and Intersight were made aware of limited budget and that they would first perform necessary tasks, incur such costs, and that the department would only effect necessary payments on certified work as and when funds are made available, either through approved requirements in terms of Section 43 and or when National Treasury made such funds available through applicable budget processes. That is all. This is one from, it's the same for all of them. I was still going to get from the four other MCs.
Are you aware that both Servcon and Intersight, after signing the service level agreement with you, they actually issued tenders for service providers to execute the contracts, the contract between you and themselves?
Chairperson, I'm not in the executive management of Servcon.
Are you aware, sir?
I'm not in the executive committee of Servcon and or Intersight. They have every right to do whatever they do in terms of their management practices. That's number one. Even when we give money to IDT or CSIR, they have a procurement process they embark upon. It's not a question for me to answer.
I don't have the mandate to refuse to answer it. It's not under oath anyway to be forced to.
Chairperson, the recording from here is a recording that can be used in a court of law. I am not aware of administrative processes of parastate house in terms of what they do. The service level agreement, if I had it here, it's very specific in terms of what they do and how they do it. Even if, assuming they went out of their way to go and issue
get subcontracts?
Subcontractors, they would be guided by their budget because they are also PFMA entities, and they will have to say, we had a budget, we called for tenders, and now we're paying them. So it's got nothing to do with public works. Even if they called them, it was not public works money at that time. So that's why I'm saying I do not wish to answer that one. And I'm just saying it from my experience as somebody who comes from a poor state.
Okay. Now, given the fact that this transaction was for an amount over a million, you did not find it necessary that you should inform National Treasury and the Auditor General that here I've committed the state to 223 million outside the normal laws and regulations and practice notes. We did not find that necessary.
The presentation I was cut to do, I'm not sure of the page, it's very specific. When I met the Auditor General's people on January 2007, remember we were debating whether it's an irregular expenditure.
January 2007 or 2009,
last year.
Yeah.
Remember we were debating the aspect of whether or not it's irregular or not. And I said it's not irregular because it was a directive. They then said, Chief, we're still looking at it, but we're telling you because no money has been spent to inform Treasury. We did exactly that. I think a detailed letter was written, and I'm sure it's with the department. It has to be located in the file that is there. We did exactly that to inform Treasury, and Treasury came back before my departure to say we are still looking at the issue. I even engaged the Director General of Treasury telephonically, and they said we are looking at it, we'll come back to you. I left on 2nd of April. They never came back in terms of that. You communicate such issues if it qualifies that section of PFMA. In terms of the decision that I implemented, it was not an irregular expenditure.
Let me say,
and I got to leave without it being spent.
Okay.
Because not a cent was paid anyway.
Okay, sir. Let's just read chapter 7 of the Public Finance Management Act. It says that
section
63.
Page 69.
Subsection 1, subparagraph A, says that executive authorities.
That's page 69.
Okay.
Yes,
yes, sir.
That executive authorities of departments must perform their statutory functions within the limits of the funds authorized for the relevant vote. You should have been aware that this transaction over the available 30 million rand is in fact against this section as an accounting officer. Will I be correct to suggest so?
Will you be correct to suggest that? I've referred to that section in my report.
Have you been unable to disconnect?
Sorry?
You've been unable to disconnect.
I was able to connect. I was trying to disconnect. Oh.
Yes.
Okay. The executive authority of departments must perform their statutory functions within the limits of the funds authorized to the relevant vote. I 100% agree. But like I said, the executive authority can also give a written expression to what to do. And section 64.1 must be read in conjunction. It says, any directive by an executive authority of the department to the accounting office of the department having financial implications for the department must be in writing. That in writing is the one that's right. It came in the form of a MINMEC directive. It negates what you... And again, that section relates particularly to where you are to do work and you are to engage private concerns, and you don't have a budget. That's why I'm saying what the work given to the two state entities was not a tender.
Now, let's go to section 38, subsection 2, which says that the accounting officer, that on page 47,
Section 47?
38?
Yeah.
Subsection 2?
Yeah.
It says the accounting officer may not commit a department to a liability for which money has not been appropriated. Now, it was you signing a service level agreement to the tune 2 to 3 million, which you never had, I mean, in your department for that purpose in the department. What do you say about
that? Person, that is not correct.
Yeah, explain.
It is not correct because I have already indicated the processes that were followed. I did not sit in a corner and called my officials and said, I'm signing a service level agreement and I'm committing the department to 223 million. That decision is a decision that comes from a constitutional body in writing and as a directive to the Director General. And it was done conditionally. It was not per se that it go out, do 223 million and we will pay you. So that is not correct.
Did you at that time advise the minister or even the other participants that in fact the money for this project we don't have? Did you, as a officer, did you ever, advise to that?
President, the presentation was clear from the onset why we went to MINMEC. We said we had a minuscule budget of 30 million, and we are obligated to perform auditing of assets before the 31st of March 2008. We don't have a budget. We have located state institutions that have a budget that will assist us to the same tune.
30 million was a product of environment.
You know, Chairperson, it's there. It's not something, the Honourable Member is asking me a question that was presented. It's there in my presentation. It is a process. It's unfortunate, again, that it was asked otherwise. I'm trying to locate why I'm being asked a question when, in fact, the answer is there.
No, yeah. I think it's important that you give the answers to us in relation to the law, because you made reference to the fact that in your responses to the AG that they were not actually looking at the PFMA and Section 217 of the Constitution.
Can you look at the Constitution, Section 41, please, and read it? And then ask me in connection with that, because that is the one that qualifies the written directive from MINMEC. And the Constitution is the supreme law. All other laws are subordinate to the Constitution. Now, this PFMA is read in conjunction with that. That action is justified by that. That is why I did not want to answer your question in that context. And Section 41 is articulated here, so is Section 38.
Can you sum up Section 41 for those of us who don't have the Constitution? Yeah. Just a summary to say this is what it says.
Section 41, 1H, page 40. All spheres of government and
departments.
Section 41, 1H.
Says page 40.
Section 41, 1, H.
1, H, okay.
Principles of cooperative governance and intergovernment.
If you have this, it will be page 25. All right, just...
Principles of corporate governance and intergovernmental relations. All spheres of government and all organs of state within each sphere must age. Cooperate with one another in mutual trust and good faith by fostering friendly relations, assisting and supporting one another. And I think this was in support of one another. Informing one another and of consulting one another on matters of common interest. It was common interest. We did not have a budget. They had the capacity. They had the expertise and they had the budget to perform the function. Informing one another and consulting one another, coordinating their actions and legislations with one another, adhering to agreed procedures, and as far as possible, avoiding legal proceedings against one another. Hence I was saying, even if the money is not paid, it does not affect me in any way, because it was a state-owned entity that had agreed to perform the function.
Okay,
now, you take that, you then read it in line with how we operated in terms of that, because that's a constitutional body. The minutes thereof are signed by the executing authority. I was guided by a directive in writing from that body, chaired by the minister.
All right.
Okay. Then just in conclusion,
sure.
Be clarified in terms of that section. And that is the basis on which you entered into this
service level agreement. It was such, as you mentioned.
I'm saying, the section that you asked me a question about and why I operated in the manner I operated is largely premised. The section of the PFMA is ducktailed in this. And there are a lot of interpretation. Can I ask that we don't be the interpreters here? I just read the section to you and to indicate how it was used.
All right. Now, I just want to indicate to you, sir, that you see, you were supposed to have tendered consistent with section 217 of the Constitution, not the section.
Can go to that one as well?
You can read for us as you.
217. Yeah. I referred to in my earlier reports.
Yes.
It's also, we now also embarking on the Auditor General's report.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, it's a matter. Which section? One, when an organ of state in national, provincial, and local sphere of government and any other institution identified in the blah blah contracts for goods and services, it must do so in accordance with a system which is fair, equitable, transparent, competitive, and cost-effective. The explanation answers on fairness, the very document that you have. It answers on equitability, it answers on transparency, and it negates competitiveness because we are not calling private consent. It also addresses cost-effectiveness. There's a section I referred to in the document itself, in terms of the presentation, in terms of the responsibilities of the accounting officer. The accounting officer informed by, there's a particular section in terms of PFMA. It's where the accounting officer has the responsibility to cost effectively and efficiently exercise his authority. It's here in the presentation, Chairperson. I have to look it up as well.
All right.
You see, when you apply these sections, you apply those sections collectively, not individually. And hence, Chairperson, again, I did not go into the Auditor General's report purely because I was advised not to do so.
So, you would not think, in your opinion, say, save for a presentation, that had you allowed other companies to partake, they could have competed differently to what Servcon and Etherside had showed you.
The information before MINMEC, and it's in a document I had also displayed there, indicates that prior to recommendation to MINMEC, there was what we call the AREP. If I'm not mistaken, it's AREP. It's called AREP program, where private concerns were asked to do the same function. Now, the function is categorized in terms of 7 issues. They only performed one. We wanted the 7 issues. And the 7 issues were costed at 4,000. We did not have money for 4,000. The 2 state entities were offering the 7 issues except the appraisal of those properties, what we call the evaluation in terms of appraisers. They separated just that one. But the other 6 elements were there. It was that. The 30 million was going to come to 214 per property, qualifying one item of 6. It was not going to help us to meet the deadline of the 31st of March in terms of being audited otherwise. Secondly, you know, when the process of us not completing things in that financial year, we had to go and present to the Accountant General that we could not meet the deadline of 31 March 2008 purely because of technical issues. That's why we were given an extension to 31 March 2000, the following year, to do that. And I'm told they are qualified because the work has been done, but it has not been related to the processes. The reason we did not go out to those companies is because we did not have money to do it. We could not meet that. And there was an alternative in terms of the Constitution, the PFMA, and other acts to go to those other companies.
Okay, the amount
I would want you to round up.
Yes, the amount of 4,000 rands was an estimation by your department, am I correct?
By the officials in the asset management.
It was not an amount determined from the various bids by private companies.
They used a model to say for RF, they spent so much and they got one item of the six. So if they were to get the six items, that's the model they used.
Yes, when you agree with me, it is not necessarily, what private companies suggested they would cost the project. It was, in fact, the work done internally in our institution at the time.
Yes, but remembering that the budget was not enough to do the entire portfolio.
Well, that's fine.
All right. Comrades, who want to make follow-ups? I would want us to stick to this issue on supply chain management process. And I think that for me there are two issues. One, it is the issue of the directive, whether or not there was a directive and whether or not the minutes constituted directive. And secondly, the question of competitive bids. I think your last question actually should have been the first, because it was a process done in-house and out of it was extrapolated that therefore this is what it might cost. And so it might have been misleading to the executive authority that private companies would have charged higher. I think that's where it is. Comrade Billy, Pretorius, Steel, Singh, Hosh.
Chairperson, today, very, very quick pointed one. Two quick ones. With reference to MINMEC minutes of the 25th of May 2009, the AG is telling us that those minutes were unsigned. So the question is to Mr. Maroga, did you see the signed minutes of that minutes yourself? I'm saying so because those minutes were a directive to you to perform or to execute the function. Are you in a position of those signed minutes? Because AG doesn't have the signed minutes. That's the first one.
Yes, Dr. Morocco.
Chairperson, I wanted to go into the report. The report acknowledges that CEFCON and Intersight were appointed to the tune of 223 million by MINMEC, but on a pilot program.
Question,
I've got a report. I don't have in front of me a report that says unsigned minutes. I'm saying I have the Auditor General's report that says those two entities were appointed by MINMEC on a pilot program. Hence, I wanted to explain the difference between 223 million and the limitations on a pilot, and why the interpretation. Now, that's the report I have. Perhaps if I can see the one where it says unsigned. I have a report that says you have exceeded the scope of a pilot program. And it's here.
I understand that maybe we are being too technical here. I'm saying from where I'm seated, the AG is saying they received the unsigned minutes. So the pointed question was, are you in a position? And if not, if you don't have those signed minutes yourself, what was then a directive to you, a written directive that gave you something written, something legal, something binding you that go and execute this. This is what the MINMEC is saying to you.
Maybe with due respect, I am going to read, I found the page. Page 4 of the Auditor General report. The Minister should address the following. The intention of MINMEC, when I say MINMEC, I say DPWNIF, when they referred to service providers like CEFCON and Intersight to conduct the audit of state assets on a pilot basis in their minutes. I do not have where it says unsigned. And I also explain, the minutes of MINMEC are adopted, even if it was not adopted in the next meeting, perhaps you should go and look as to whether the adoption was in November, December. I have to go into the department and verify that. Now, I wanted to tell you about the same report I have. It does not say unsigned, Chairperson.
All right. That's fine. You had a second question.
Okay.
And that's the directive, sir. Sorry.
I hear that, Chairperson. The question is, Mr. Maroga did not see the signed minutes from the MINMEC. That is the long and short of it. Did you? You did not see?
No. I'm answering. The question was, the Auditor General report says unsigned minutes. And I was saying it is yes. It does not talk about unsigned minutes. So I cannot answer that question. Right. I have not seen that. So it's something
fine.
I'm hearing from you.
It's fine. Go to the next question.
Just last quick one. Because I may want to go to a law school and learn these things. I don't want to take it further. But you are saying this is not a tender. I just want to find out if, in your understanding, the AG has the same understanding as yourself, as with that reference of the fact that this is not a tender. By explanation, it means it excludes all these processes that should have been followed. Does the AG have the same understanding with yourself that this was not in the first place a tender?
That is
because you cannot engage with them in any event on these issues.
There are a whole range of other acts that can be read to answer that. But I'm just saying, if the act says cooperate with one another in mutual trust and good faith, assisting and supporting one another. A department was being assisted by state institutions to perform work. That is why, and it's not the only such, Chairperson. I heard you were talking about precedents. If I'm given the opportunity to go across all the departments and show you money transferred from a department to a state institution, I think that is the most common area. And again, they do not participate in the tendering of those state institutions. So they are following this. So you read that in line with this.
Right.
Hence, I was saying, as a accounting officer, my directive was premised on what was confirmed here. What we should be engaging is whether or not the pilot program had limitations, and I exceeded the scope of my limitation. In a criminal case, Chair, you hit somebody with a fist, you come back with five fists, they say you've exceeded the scope of your defense. This is the parameter what I wanted to ask, so that you can say to me, but you did. But again, I went on further to say the reporting to MINMEC in the subsequent meetings was to the effect that it's 223 million, X number of properties, and nobody objected to say you are exceeding the ambit of your directive.
Okay.
That's my question.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm still looking at you. I should be looking at that. He's intimidating me.
No. You must keep your eyes fixed on him throughout the hearing. Pretorius? Yeah, you not still, you'll come up to Pretoria.
Sorry, Chair, my question actually relates to exactly what Comrade Mbidi has.
Okay, fine.
So if I could follow and then
Honourable
Pretorius.
Yeah, you can come.
Thank you, Chair. I'm also concerned about the limitations on this pilot.
Yeah.
And I want to know whether the MINMEC minutes actually stipulated any limitations of scope, of scale. In other words, were there limitations specified as to the time of the pilot, the number of units to be assessed, the value? What actually defined it as a pilot in those minutes?
Okay. But, Chairman, with due respect, I do not have in front of me the presentation and the documents that served before MINMEC. But my faint recollection, it would have been very clear that we recommend to MINMEC, we appoint CEFCON and Intersight. We recommend that they go and look at all the 140,000 properties. We recommend that the amount of 1,596 they presented to us be accepted as the incidental costs to be implemented by them. And MINMEC said, all right, we agree that both institutions must be appointed on a pilot program. However, the minute of MINMEC did not have limitations to say it is five properties at 5,000. So I'm saying that is the articulation that we need to go back and look at. That's why I'm saying there were no limitations.
Well, sorry, Chair, the minutes stipulated that it was to be a pilot project. Now, quite clearly, that word pilot would not have been placed in the minutes unless there were an understanding that there were to be limitations of scale or scope attached. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense to have used the word pilot. So what is the former DG's understanding of pilot then?
The reason why I say there were no limitations and there were no objections later is because when we went back to MINMEC to report on progress in terms of technicalities around signing service level agreements, implementation program, we said X number of properties, so much amount and everything, and there was no objection that you exceeded the ambit of the pilot project.
So it might as well be that at a political level it was decided as a
pilot
project,
the entire thing.
But then at the implementation level you took the totality of the properties of the department
and reported to MINMEC accordingly.
No, correct. And then
they
never objected.
That's correct. That's how I define the limitation, because it does not say any other way.
Yes, do.
Okay. The second follow-up question, Chair, that I have relates to the MINMEC action list. Now, the former DG is adamant that both ServCon and Intersite were mentioned, but the document that he provided, November 2007, states ServCon would be the only public entity, and that is the document that he provided. Now, I'm not sure why there is this discrepancy.
Okay. I did explain earlier, Chair, that post the way of handling the technical aspects of this process, there was a lull on the side of Intersite. It's at administrative level. That apparently they were not coming to the party, there were certain things they were clarifying and everything. But that was sorted out before the signing of the service level agreement and referred to the original approval. What MINMEC approved were two institutions. So I'm not, there are many documents that were produced prior to that. But when the signatures were done, the signing on, they were signed on in terms of the original decision and reported upon.
So, Chair, I need to establish the status of this document. This was a document supplied by the accounting officer. MINMEC approved ServCon as the only public entity provider. Now, was this document withdrawn? Was it replaced? Is there some doubt as to the status of this document? Because that is what has been provided to the audit authorities.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, Chairperson. There are other documents. And I'm saying negated to that. When the service level agreement was signed, it was for the two entities in terms of the original. So I take it if it was written by myself, in terms of that, there are later documents qualifying the original appointment.
I just want to be clear on record then, Chair, that the former DG is saying that this document that was supplied, he acknowledges that it was supplied, but he is also stating that it was subsequently replaced. That is his assertion. Is that correct?
The unfortunate thing you are referring to documents, I'm a former chief administrator, I don't have them in front of me to contextualize the way I did with the gentlemen across Chairperson, because they are here. So I don't want to answer things that are very, in a way, faint. Because they are saying.
Yeah, no. I think the point he's making is that the original decision was, say, ServCon only.
No. There's a context in that very document that I would like to see how it came about. And I'm saying I don't have that liberty at the moment.
No,
I cannot answer that one.
No, I think, well, from where I'm seated, context is not that critical. All he's saying is that the original agreement was that it would be ServCon. But by the time you signed the service level agreement, it was now ServCon and Intersite.
Chairperson, let me ask this. What is that? Is that a recommendation? Is it a paragraph on its own? I'm trying to locate. It must be a thick document, really. It must be contextualized. So if I can be assisted. I don't know, maybe it's a paragraph somewhere in the middle of that very thick document. I'm a person who's able to produce 55-page documents in 24 hours, so it must be something like that. Then I can answer that, because I don't know from which context it's captured.
Chair, the context of only is a very short context. It applies to only one entity.
No, I'm saying the document, Chair.
Right. No. I think I understand him and understand him very well. You see, it's a factual position that at the beginning the decision that was taken at MINMEC only identified Servcon.
Right at the beginning.
So the first minutes will talk to Servcon and Intersight.
That's correct.
All right.
Even the Auditor General confirmed it. That is one thing I'm trying to contextualize it, because that's a later document. It is late in the month. And I did say there was that lull. Unfortunately, the technical aspect of what was happening and everything, I got to be involved in it around November, December, when I was given a draft agreement, and I wanted to make sure that it is compliant, and I had to engage officials.
Okay. Can I go to Pretoria still? Pretoria?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I want to thank Mr. Naroga for being frank with us and giving us more clarity on some of the issues. Side team, whatever we said previously in media and wherever, is based on what we hear in transmission.
Yes, I understand that.
My question is a technical one, and I don't want us to interpret, but I want Mr. Maroka's view on who exactly is the executive authority, because we continually talk about MINMEC meetings and MINMECs, which is a joint ministerial committee, whereas my understanding of the executive authority is that your own minister is your executive authority. And I come from that side of the fence as well. I've been around with that. So that perhaps could be the reason for some of the uncertainty why some people are saying you did not get the authority, and you say you did get the authority by even a signed or an unsigned minutes from MINMEC. My own view is that a MINMEC meeting, a MINMEC minutes, is not the executive authority. If we can just go further and say to you, what would the implication be if your minister, subsequent to the MINMEC meeting, gives you a further instruction or a directive which slightly deviates from the MINMEC decision? In other words, the minister is prepared to stick out her or his neck himself. Whose decision do you then follow?
Okay. Chairperson, thank you. You know, in 1994, we were not able to say, I have this experience. I have 15 years' experience in the public service. In fact, 16. And I'm also the co-drafter of this green document. I was the team from Free State writing this very document. The written directive of the executive authority is not specified which form. Now, because the executive authority signs the minutes, and the minutes serves as directive to accounting officers to implement across departments. That's the context I'm saying it. So I don't want you to differentiate between where the minister sits and writes a memo to DG from minister saying 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 2, 1. The minutes that are signed are meant for the administration to implement, and they are only qualified by the minister. So it's in that context, Chairperson.
I accept that. May I just follow up and ask whether that's been tested in a court of law, that interpretation?
Oh, by all means, Chairperson, it can be tested. I'm saying,
has it been tested?
I'm saying it's written. It does not say in brackets.
No, it's trying to check precedence.
Well, I'm saying in writing. I'm correcting it. I'm saying the writing in the document itself does not say writing must be specifically limited to.
Yeah,
but I'm saying as accounting officers, we have implemented decisions that are captured in the writing format of the executive authority signing. In other words, when the executive authority signs the minutes, it's a directive from the executive authority.
No. Look, that's an interpretation, isn't it? Because it is not explicit in terms of which form. So it's asking whether your interpretation has ever been confirmed in law or tested in law.
I'm trying to see.
It's a simple yes or no.
Chairperson, can I ask a question?
The point here is that.
I'll answer. Can I ask your humble.
Just before you ask. Because the fact that a lot of MINMEC minutes have been used as directives does not necessarily make it legal. So I think that is the base of his question. Because what you're giving is an interpretation that, in your view, because it's not specifically stated how the directive should be written.
Chairperson, directives of MINMEC are legal. They've been used in court of law.
All right.
Thank you.
No, that's fine. Are you done to do this? All right. See?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I don't want to interpret the Constitution, but I'm surprised yesterday when I spoke in Parliament about legal advisers. Normally, Advocate Jenkins is around, you know, but today I see this. No parliamentary legal advisers, because maybe one lawyer can talk to another lawyer. We are laymen. But Chair, having said that, I just want to pick up on Section 41 of the Constitution. And I want to say that I also come from the other side. unassigned meaning for 10 years on a continuous basis, I have been attending MinMecs. Tourism, agriculture, finance, etc., etc., etc. And I want to submit that at no time in my attending MinMecs for 10 years, the understanding was that a MinMec directive is an instruction to the Director General of a department to do A, B, or C. In terms of this, I want to submit that it is a place where we came together, we sat, we talked, we discussed. It was not a statutory formation. It was not, MINMEC has never been, neither is the Presidential Coordinating Committee, in my view, a place where you can take a directive from. What is clear is the PFMA says the executing authority needs to give that directive. And what I'd like to know, did the minister at that time issue a directive or a letterhead of the minister indicating do 1, 2, 3, or 4? Because that's what the PFMA says. And I liken this, chairperson, to we pass legislation. Sometimes we spend 5, 6, 7 years, the Children's Act. We go to Parliament, eventually Parliament passes it. It's not law until the President puts his or her signature to it. Then it becomes a law, then it becomes an official directive. So I just want to submit that MINMEC is a body, PCC is a body where we get together, we talk, because in 1991 to 1994, in the CODESA process, we have not been able to actually work out whether we are a unitary state or we are a federal state. And there were concessions made which came to this conclusion here, that you sit together and you talk about things in cooperative to promote cooperative governance. That's the first thing that I'd like to submit. Secondly, Chairperson, if you look at the PFMA, section 50, it's on page 57 and 58. What I'd like to note is when this matter was discussed of either giving CEFCON or Intersite, it's page section 3, subsection A and B. Now, the former Director General must have been there at the MINMEC meeting because he remembers very clearly what happened. He also says that he advised MINMEC that CEFCON what's the other company? Intersite were the only two companies that were capable of performing a function that they needed done. Did the former Director General, I just want to know, did he withdraw from the proceedings of that meeting because he had an interest in CEFCON? Whether it was a state-owned enterprise or whatever, did he withdraw or did he participate in those proceedings at that MINMEC meeting? Because PFMA says that you should withdraw.
The last
thank
question
you.
Refers to the time.
It's just a minute.
Okay. To which one?
Yeah, no, I'm aware. I was going to rule on that.
Okay.
I think the last question would be dealt with by Chulan. Maybe let's deal with the first one. That's why Pretoria's question becomes very relevant.
Chairperson, section 50, I think it's not applicable to me. It says accounting authority. I was accounting officer. Chairperson, can I just...
No, that's fine. Let's go back to the first question.
Double verify something. I don't remember seeing you were MEC of Housing. You appeared in meetings with me at MINMEC at Housing.
Chair, not that I can recall.
There are a number of directives that came from that MINMEC to provinces, to everybody, which were implemented from that MINMEC at that time. I was chief director of housing from 15. That's why I'm saying that precedent, really. Secondly, the same Public Service Act, it would have been so interesting if the legal team was here, the entire legal team. It does not say letterhead of the minister. I'm saying equally so, Chair.
Yeah, sure.
It does not say the letterhead of minister, hence the interpretation. I still stand by my decision. The written authority from executive authority to the accounting officer in writing came in the form of a minute, because the minister signed the minute. Therefore, the minister legitimized the instruction in writing in that context. And there are precedents.
All right. Okay.
And if I'm given time, I can go back. I will find them and I will bring them. They are.
Okay. See?
Chairperson, I just want to submit. In this constitution, they refer to Parliament they refer to the National Council of Provinces, which are bodies that are created in terms of this constitution. Is MINMEC a constitution, a body created in terms of this constitution?
Our MINMEC has a national department. It has provinces, and it has representation from SALGA for municipalities. And it's in terms of Chapter 6, if I'm not mistaken. And yes, MINMEC is a constitutional body.
In terms of which section of which act or which part
of
the constitution?
If I can recollect, there's Chapter 6 there.
Which
and Chapter 3.
Of what? Of the constitution?
Of the constitution, yes.
Chapter 6 and Chapter 3?
Yes, right in conjunction.
Malala.
But MINMEC is a constitutional body to enable support and everything. Corporate Governance, Chapter 3, the whole of it. It's about MINMEC. It's actually Section 41. That section is MINMEC. MINMEC is advised by that section. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, follow up. Same Section 41, what's it now? Page 26 of our Constitution, 1H2. An act of Parliament must establish or provide for structures and institutions to promote and facilitate intergovernmental relations. An act of Parliament. I can't ever recall an act of Parliament creating the Presidential Coordinating Committee or a MINMEC. I'm just putting that on the table. I can't recall. And I've been in government from 1994.
All right. Let's do this. I think our interpretation of that section, and more especially the section in the PFMA, is very clear. It relates to a directive that have financial implications. Any other directive that relates to
any other thing
is not covered in terms of Section 64. So our focus and limitation must be on those elements that have financial implications. Steve?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to follow up the answer that the former DG has just given. He regarded the minutes of this MINMEC meeting as giving him authority to act. These are the minutes that he has agreed, said that the project should be on a pilot basis, and that this pilot basis, there were no limits set as to the scope or scale. Now, I want to ask, would it not have been reasonable for him in his position as a former DG, seeing these minutes stating that this was to be on a pilot basis, would it not have been reasonable to have gone back to the minister as the executive authority and asked for the pilot basis to be spelled out? Would that not have been reasonable?
Okay. Chairperson, I've repeatedly answered that one. I said, remember I was about 56 days in the position when this was done. I went back to report to MINMEC to say, your decision of May, this is how we've implemented it. And we gave numbers and everybody. And in that context, in terms of it being a directive to me, remembering that I'm not using even my budget at that time, nobody objected to it. So I'm putting the concern in reverse. That was my understanding at that time.
Khush?
Chair, thanks. maybe mine should start, Chair, with the planning part. Pilot set project was budgeted for 30 million, but subsequent to that, 223 was then utilized. I wanted to check.
Not utilized. Not yet.
Committed. I mean.
Not yet utilized.
Maybe funding push is the second focus area.
No, it's not necessarily funding. I wanted to deal with it from that particular angle. I wanted to check the planning part of the department. Where how did you arrive at the 30 million?
No, Khush. Let me rule on that one. Let's deal with it under funding, because it talks to at the heart of the issue around funding. So just hold it. When Dambi is busy around there, we can
I want us to move to the second focus area. Safe to say that the issues that are coming out clearly in Tate Moroka is around the directive. And I think you are very clear that in your own understanding, very firm understanding, is that the minutes of MINMEC serve as a directive.
Every 10 months.
Yeah, no, the minutes, yeah. So it satisfies Section 64.1. Now, I don't know whether that is an administrative understanding or it's a legal understanding, but I'm sure from the questioning that came from this side, when I first read that section, my understanding was that you are expected to receive a communication that confirms that I, as the minister in the sphere of government, this is what I'm directing you to do, arising out of. I would imagine that people who sit in organizations, you sit and take a decision that ABCD must be done, but you still expect your general secretary to issue out a circular that directs and confirms what has been decided upon. So, from where we're seated here, our understanding, I think it's something new that is now getting into our minds, that there is an interpretation that says a directive in writing could be the minutes of MINMEC. So let's underline that, because then that is what challenges our conventional understanding of what a directive is. And I'm sure we'll at some point in writing our report have to come to our own conclusion about what we think would have been the most appropriate way of handling it or not.
Chairperson, my humble request, the reason why I said I was supposed to try and incur a little bit of costing on my part to bring the former minister along as well. But of course, in terms of protocol issues, she didn't have clarity on this. My take on it should have been here to explain that she captured it before the committee, our Public Works Committee. I think she captured it in the budget speech for the financial year 2008-09, before her departure. She captured it between the debriefing session between herself and the current Minister of Public Works, that our MINMEC appointed Sefcon and Interside. She was going to be on record in terms of that. Now, I'm trying to indicate to you, let alone the interpretation, our interpretation around written directive and all of that, there are documentation in the department, if I was allowed, because I'm a no-go in that case. I've not been to the department chairperson in the 14 months, because I have absolutely no direct dealings with the department in the months I've been away. If I was allowed, I would have been in a position to go and find the documents that are necessary to advise you to qualify the written authority from that context, i.e., there are minutes of what we call executive committee, chaired by the minister with presentation from the department to the minister by us. And in it, there's a clear capturing on processes regarding the implementation of this very pilot program. All of those, that information, it is located in the department.
No.
So I'm just saying over above that.
No, I hear that. I think the point here is that even if it was the minister who approved the way things happened, if it is not in terms of the procedures, it remains unprocedural, irrespective of whether the minister would have been here to confirm that.
Oh, yes, no.
So our point is limited to the purely and lean procedural aspect, which a minister or even the president might violate. And if, in our interpretation of the law, we feel that the president or the minister has violated procedure, we will say so. Without, I think we're trying to move away from where we started, that this is an inquisition against an individual. We're purely looking at process, whether it affects you or it affects MINMEC, or it is MINMEC that made a mistake, or it is the minister who made a mistake. Ours is to look at process and our interpretation of how process are laid down in law.
Chairperson, I'm not in any way shifting any blameworthiness from my part.
Sure.
I am just saying there are certain other processes that allowed the engagement between myself and the minister to look at this decision in a series of written and constitutionally correct processes in the department. And my recollection tells me that. So I'm not saying in any way it's the minister's fault. No, I'm not.
No, sure. I just wanted to clear that. just to make sure we have covered the basis. The second element that I think for me comes out, it's the issue of the competitive bids. And I think you've been very eloquent in stating your case that because these are state-owned entities, and there was a policy decision or a decision at MINMEC level. Because I also spoke to one of the former MECs who was very firm that we took a policy decision and said officials deal with the administrative processes. So, once again, it is a legal provision and also a matter of interpretation whether if services are going to be procured from a state entity, does that necessarily exclude a competitive process where you open it up for everybody and you are able to confirm that indeed the state entity was cost effective vis-a-vis private entities? I think for me that is the second element that in dealing with this section we'll have to, I'm sure the committee will apply its mind and seek to we'll read your side and how you interpret and how you understand it.
Okay, Chairperson, can I just ask that as you look at it, we were informed by a previous appointment of private consents in terms of RF. That's how the policy decision was. In other words, there was a previous testing in terms of private consents. So this was not the first process.
No, fine. Hush, before we give Comrade Mutami.
Chair, on this theme of written authority, I think maybe the point that we should drive home here is to say whether the minutes were there or not, the first chair, it was irregular. That was never, done according to the law. The law said a written letter to that effect, a written consent,
directive.
Exactly, should be written to, the DG. And that was never done. We can argue and bring whatever, interpretation. The fact of the matter is non-compliance, it's there. It was never, followed as the law requires.
All right. I think I had ruled on that. Tate Moroka will repeat what he has said. That as far as is concerned, the minutes constituted a directive, and he acted on the basis of those minutes. And I think you were speaking for everybody here. I can see heads nodding that our understanding is that a directive should have been a letter from the minister saying, this is what I want you to do. And it might be a layman's understanding. The courts would have a different understanding. But at this stage, we're in the process of exchanging information. We'll distill it and come to our own position. I'll reserve my this comment to the last part. Comrade Ndame.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is related to funding definitely. I'd like to check with the former DG for him to confirm that he signed the service level agreement with the two companies, Servcon and Intersight, on the confirmation.
No, service level agreement, yes. That's still.
Yeah,
informed by the directive, yes.
Yes, informed by the directive. And then I had to believe that it had an amount in the timeline as to when the project was going to be completed. As far as you remember, what was the amount for this entire service level agreement? The amount agreed to with the two companies.
The amount?
Yes.
I know there was. It was divided into half between the two.
But amount of
that amount, yes, two. That's correct. Million. That's correct.
The total amount of 223 million divided into half.
Yes.
And then the company, the project was supposed to be completed by end of March 2009.
Yes, initially March 2008, but then extended to March 2009.
And then you also agree with me, at that time you only had 30 million appropriated for that project up to end of March 2009.
Remembering the decision was a policy decision not based on the 30 million? but based on incidental costs on the part of state-owned entities. $30 million was not set aside for purposes of the $30 million.
$30 million then for?
You know, the $30 million is the budget we had. But the $30 million would only have addressed one of the 6.8. So I'm saying that's why it was a policy decision to ask those entities with incidental costs and capacity to assist us. Let me tell you how it was going to happen. If it was implemented, hence, Chairperson, I was saying of the $223 million, I was there, I even left without it being spent. And even last year in April, nothing was spent. I don't know about the status now. The whole idea was, firstly, they go and do the work. They then submit claims, and then they are paid progressively from the $30 million. But then the accounting officer, together with the executing authority, would look at Section 43 for savings to service as and when it is possible. Two, to also go to National Treasury to look for budgets in other years, because the service level agreement itself was not specific that you do the work and you'll be paid by the time you finish the work. It's very specific that you'll be paid as and when we have, because you're a state entity and they're still there.
Yeah.
So I'm just clarifying the two. Now, the $30 million was not used in terms of it deviating through policy. For purposes of, you have $30 million, call private concerns and make a tender. It was not decided upon in that.
Yeah. I'm battling to understand your explanation in that we are saying you signed a service level agreement amounting to $223 million.
Conditionally. It was conditional agreement. It was not an agreement like to Mem Dambo as a private concern. That Mem Dambo, go and do the audit of the assets, we'll pay you $223 million when you are done. It was not like that. It was signed to say, go and do work to the tune of $223 million, but we will progressively pay you as and when we have money, because you are a state-owned entity. That's how it was signed. So it was not signed in the conventional method of setting aside. Chairperson, I need to indicate something. I, as former Director General of Public Works, in the 2 years I was there, I have approved projects in excess of 4.1 billion year one, 4.1 billion or 3.8 billion year two. Divided. None of them are here. None of them are being questioned to say, Moroka, you irregularly did this. That's another process, and that process is a process where you go to the procurement processes, you look at private concerns, you do what was. The 30 million was not administered in that context.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, it becomes a difficult one, because you said that saying that there was no claim, but according to the invoices submitted to the department end of December, that were amounting $73 million.
Yeah, no, there's nothing wrong with invoices submitted, because the invoices that were submitted to say this is the work we've done.
Mm-hmm.
The departmental officials were supposed to certify the work, and there were queries around the certified work. But the same service level agreement says you will only be paid what we have at that time, because you are doing it with your budget. So it does not necessarily mean they submitted and they were supposed to be paid. December 2008, we are in May 2009. They are still not paid and they are not complaining. They are not taking us to court. If it was a private concern, outside of the 30-day period, I would be in court explaining that. That is why I also referred to the Constitution. Thank you, sir.
But you see, sir, apart from that, they also claim interest amounting to 335 by December. That is interest on overdue account. If indeed it was on a service level agreement that they will claim as and when it's convenient for the DPW to effect payments. Now, why did they also claim interest if that was the spirit of the service level agreement?
Okay, sorry, Chair. There was a meeting, I don't have minutes thereof. There was a technical meeting headed by myself where I instructed them that there's no interest, and I referred to the service level agreement. It was one company, I think it was Interside at that time, and I said there's no interest. Two, we also took, I think it was after the 10th of October 2008, when officials came and said there are certain processes in terms of certification that are not met. Therefore, the $73 million that has been claimed is not $73 million actually. And we then said, stall the process, clear the snacks, and once you are done, come back. But in that same meeting, the issue of interest was handled. That is not part of the deal. And it was resolved at that time. As far as I can remember, Chairperson.
Okay.
And it was never an issue. And in that meeting, I was there. There was CERCOL, there was Intersight, and I told them specifically.
Are the minutes of that meeting, because if indeed they were there, I think such thing will have been provided to the AG.
Yeah.
And why didn't the AG not find such a record to say?
There is a process, there is in the report that refers to that meeting, actually. I'm not sure where. In the AG's report. There is a process where it says Manye called the two bodies, told them that the work is stalled and no payment, it's very specific. It says no payment must be effected until such time that they correct the snacks. But also, I know for a fact that we told Intersight that no interest are to be charged. And I was quite clear about that. And I still stand by that rule, Chair. There's no interest.
So this one studies provided that is in documentation, we must just ignore whatever
documents. If I go
documents.
To court and I follow the service level agreement, check, yes, I'll be able to refer to that section. Unfortunately, I don't have it in front.
Yeah, the AG also picked up that this thing of that GPW will pay as and when it's convenient to you to pay. There's no such thing in the service level agreement.
I don't have it in front.
Yeah, but that I think the AG on that one can come on to say in the service level agreement doesn't indicate that the department will pay us and when it's convenient. I think
but then I don't have a service level. If I have it, I can. Because I'm certain that the auditors, they look at financial methods.
So if you cannot
look at legal implications, which part of it?
Yeah. Can you maybe take us through that one when it says they will only claim incidental costs as and when it's convenient for DPW to effect payments?
Can you still
in the service level agreement?
Let's do this. Can someone, Mr. Vukem, assist us by checking through? Otherwise, we'll have to page through the whole document and whilst we're waiting, can we deal with other matters, and once they've found or not found that section, we can then come back to it.
Yeah. Still to come on that one, the 223 million. Section 38(2) of the Public Finance Management Act says that an accounting officer may not commit a department to any liability for which money has not been appropriated. I understand your explanation on the matter, but given the fact that why was it not recorded, because you said you recommended to Minmec for the two companies to be appointed, and then definitely by then you were aware of the financial implication. Why did you provide it to Minmec that this will cost 2 million, and then was also a directive to say, go ahead despite the 30 million. Go ahead to sign a contract amounting to 223 million.
Mr. Tambo, are you ignoring the fact that the chair advised Minmec took a policy decision to give me a directive to implement this in that context? That's number one. Number two, the same PFMA, and I'm trying to look at a particular section. If I'm not mistaken, Chair, it should be 80 something.
If the presenter can address members as honorable members, guess I was done. Yeah.
By my humble apology, Chair, I don't have a problem. I'm saying, Chairperson, assuming I am to capture the way it's presented, and I was wrong, Section 85 of the PFMA clearly stipulates processes to be followed, because this was known around December of 2008 by the Auditor General. This process, whilst in the employ of state, was not followed. So if I answer questions, I'll be answering questions as if it's a disciplinary case against myself, when in fact I was at time. That's number one. Number two is that it was a policy decision. It was a Minmec decision. I did not go out of my way to go and commit money, which I did not have. I've explained my processes in terms of I did not commit any money, I did not have. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. But still, one would like to follow up to say what informed that policy decision, because that this legislation should be informing that policy decision, in particular Section 38(2). of the public finance management act. I understand that it was a policy decision, but what informed that policy decision?
Honorable Mtambo, it was informed by the basis that we had a minuscule budget. We did not have the capacity and expertise to do the function, and we had two state-owned entities with capabilities to do so, and we used them.
Well, I would understand that the decision taken by MINMEC and the rationale to take it would lie in the province of the politicians and not officials.
Yeah, safe to say that they are the same politicians in his position as an accounting officer as prescribed by the Act to advise these politicians. I believe he had that fiduciary duty to advise, the duty of care and diligence.
All right.
Sorry, Chair.
All right.
Can I also explain something which was raised by Honorable Mtambo? The annexure of the service level agreement indicates, these are admin issues. It says 30,000 properties for financial year 2007/08. And or dependent on allocated stroke transferred budget by the National Department of Public Works. 40,000 assets for financial year 2008/09, and again the same, dependent and or. And additional work to be confirmed by the National Department of Public Works, displayed and confirmed by excellent performance on the part of those state-owned entities. It's in the service level agreement, page 20.
What I mean, I'm trying to answer, you
remember Chair said I don't have the copy. The question was you committed for that financial year 223 million. So I'm saying in terms of this, it was spread across. But yes, the total is 223 million. But it's very specific in terms of how we were going to generate money. So the commitment was not commitment premised on do it, we have money. It was very specific in that. Thank you, Chair.
I thought that we had asked for them to check the clause that says there will be no interest charged, or that talks to that element that precludes the element of interest.
We had a meeting to tell them that it's not there. I'm not sure whether it's there or not. But I know we had a meeting, and it's minuted. We told Interside. It was only one, two entities.
Yep.
But in terms of the agreement, you are a state-owned entity doing work with your budget. You are not a private concern. Therefore, there's no interest. So we're trying to clarify that it's not even included.
It's not included,
it's
is
not.
It?
If it was a private
concern. So why are we wasting time?
Yes, sir. No, it's not. So in other words, if it was, Chairperson, it would have been, you do the work, there will be escalation on a year on your normal contract.
All right. All right. All right. Yes, Dambi.
I still maintain this 2 to 3 million, as you're indicating, it was, but the project was supposed to be completed 31 March 2009. Like you're indicating, the breakdown definitely was 07-08. 08-09. So that's what I'm saying right now. No, that is say that is split, it doesn't hold any water, because that agreement was ending 31 March, as I've indicated, 2009. And then I'm saying for that particular period, you committed the department 223 million.
Yes.
So that thing to say it was in 2 years, it doesn't hold any water. Still, why did you commit the department for money that was not appropriated for?
I did not commit the department for money that was not appropriated.
But the seven level agreements that were signed by you, I suppose.
I just read it. It says and or when money is available. I just read it now. It's very clear. It says you will be paid and or when money is available. Thank you, Chair. Secondly, Chair, my humble apology to honorable member. I thought at that time I heard you were saying 31 March 2008.
No, I didn't.
Yes,
say
no,
that.
No. I'm saying that. Sorry.
Yeah, I should believe then, like I'm indicating, this is what we see and what the AG has found that commitment is in contravention of Section 38(2) of the Public Finance Management Act. You didn't have any right to commit the department for that 2 to 3 million.
Chairperson, I just read the service level agreement.
Yeah.
And I will repeat it again.
No.
It says dependent on allocated or
no,
transferred.
No, there's no need. I actually wanted to say, Comrade Dambi, he will repeat his position, that it was conditional. And for us, it is to check the validity of conditionality in reaching such agreements. You're done. All right, Comrade Mbili, on the speaking.
Thanks, Chairperson. Just one request. I think, Chairperson, this shouldn't be a problem. Department officials are here. I'm just humbly requesting, Chairperson, that somebody goes out, they have the office here, get to their legal document and submit to this committee a MINMEC signed minute of the 25th of May 2007. That's my request. It shouldn't be a problem. They have an office. Yeah, it should be done electronically now. Before we left, we leave here, we will have that signed. Because it worries me that why AG said that they are in a position of an unsigned MINMEC meeting. That MINMEC meeting is a directive to the DG to execute this project. So I just want to go to bed peacefully, having been convinced that yes, there was a MINMEC meeting on the 25th of May 2007, and that MINMEC meeting was signed by the accounting authority, which is the minister, and that MINMEC meeting was a directive to the DG to execute this project. Thanks, Chairperson.
All right. I'm sure that even if we get the minutes, they will still not confirm whether it was a directive or not, because that remains an interpretation of the former DG. Now, and I've said that for me that is the key area, because once we're able legally to decide whether that was a directive or not, then it unlocks a whole set of events.
I hear you, Chair. And I want to pass this one smoothly. The information I have at my disposal from the AG, which is a source document I'm engaging on, saying the minute their positions are not signed, the minutes of MINMEC, which would be in a position of public works, is signed. And those minutes are the directive to the DG to execute this project.
Right.
Because there is not any other subsequent letter. So he has been saying constantly that was the directive to himself. I'm not agreeing the whether there should be a directive or not. I'm just arguing this fact that the DG at the time received those MINMEC meeting minutes upon which he executed the project. That was a directive to himself in as far as he's concerned.
All right. Okay. At Kumati minutes, to Kumata Tona.
Thanks, Chair. We'll facilitate that those minutes be made available.
All right.
Chair, just a point of order on my part, because it will help me. I did say I'm guided by a report of the AG that I know of, not the one post this time. And I did say in their own writing, which I can share with the Chair, it clearly says
And I repeat, the intention when they refer to service providers to conduct audit assets on pilot basis in their minutes. So I'm just saying...
No, that's fine.
So I'm saying, if for example, there are processes that transpired post my departure...
Sure.
I don't have that information.
No, I fully understand that.
And this was 4 months before.
Sure, Singh?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just had a follow-up on the funding.
And comrades, it's almost 12 o'clock now. We still have... Right. Perfect.
Thank you, sir. Mine will be very, very quick. We know, and I think the Acting Director General will also know that, you know, they have lots of powers when it comes to supply chain management. And sometimes you don't go for competitive bids, etc., and you award and you appoint a service provider or a supplier, which happens. But there's, to my understanding, in terms of Treasury regulation, there's a 1 million rand limit. Now, this was 30 million rand. And one has to, the accounting officer has to get the authority of the National Treasury and the Auditor General of South Africa before they confirm that kind of contract or tender with any supplier. Did that happen in this case?
Yeah, no, he said no. They subsequently wrote to National Treasury, subsequently.
Prior to?
No, not prior.
Which is what is supposed to have been done.
Yeah, sure.
Can I explain something about that? Sorry? Okay. Chairperson, I just wanted to understand something that we did indicate. I'm trying to see. The accounting officer at my time had a limit up to 500,000. I'm not sure whether it's 1 million.
It's 1 million.
It's 1 million. To issue out tenders and to do it and all of that. If it's beyond that, you go to Treasury. But I did say this was not in that context. It was not in that context. Hence, I'm saying it's different from irregular awarding. What we did not issue a tender. We did not give a tender. We gave work.
So, all right.
So it's not in this context.
No. I think, you see, I'm not a lawyer, but you see, the problem with interpretation is that you can get 1,000 different interpretations. You see, the A400 contract came in a similar vein. Even there, it was a decision of cabinet. Now, the problem that the Auditor General had, which the department subsequently agreed to, was the fact that the cabinet decision that there should be no competitive bidding did not imply that the officials should move from the decision to implementation. They still needed to inform National Treasury in writing, which is what they did not do, and which is what they subsequently did. So, whether it is applicable in this case or not, I think it's a moot point. Fact is, if there is a political decision in terms of the administrative processes, I think that's how it should have gone. But I do not want us to belabor that point because, like you know, as a lawyer, you would argue and argue and argue until you argue no more. See, and we are not lawyers, and I don't want to take our discussion at that level. Right? Memange.
Chairperson, thank you. I wanted to find out from Mr. Vugere if we are going to get the papers that Ms. Rondini is asking before we leave here. Is it possible? Because I just heard you saying that, yeah, you will get it, but I don't know when.
We can still make them available today. We can go back to the office here, facilitate that we get the minutes and submit.
All right.
Chairperson, can I ask just on the basis of that question, because I have to change my flight. Does it mean I must be here, or it's just
No, not at all. Honourable Steele.
Thank you, Chair. The section I'm looking at is the compliance with the service level agreement. The chronology of events, Chair, is actually quite critical. As will become apparent, the service level agreement was signed in December 2007. At the beginning of October 2008, that's 10 months into the project, it was clear that things were going wrong in terms of discrepancies being identified between what the SLA stipulated should be done and what was actually being done. And on the basis of that concern, a crisis meeting was held on the 8th of October 2008. Can I just ask the former DG whether he was present at that meeting, and if so, briefly what transpired?
I was referring to the meeting where officials were saying in terms of certification it's not in order, and that they had, I think they had taken a decision, the chief operating officer had taken a decision around the 10th of October to stall the process to do that, and I think the CEOs of both institutions approached the DG to intervene. Then I called everybody in that meeting, and in that meeting I made it clear that no payment will be paid for as long as there has not been any certification, and if indeed payments were to be made upon certification, they will be limited only to what we have in the budget. And secondly, it was also that same meeting where we addressed the issue of interest. So I think one of those meetings, yes, I think even in the Auditor General's report, it refers to my attendance to one of those meetings, because it was a series of meetings for that matter.
Thank you. Can I know how the responsibility was divided between yourself and the COO with regard to this, the monitoring of the performance of this particular contract?
Okay. Chairperson, once it's like the decision of MINMEC going to me, and then I implement it, and the technical work I did up to the service level agreement. Once it reached the service level agreement, it was no longer my baby. It was now in the hands of the COO, because it was an operational matter. I only come to it if there were issues which were fundamental for my attention. And I think that's where even in the report itself, you will see that I kept on saying those aspects will be answered by the COO.
Can we go then, Chair, to the letter of the 16th of October, where the department informed Servcom and Intersight that the progress reports have been submitted, challenges and discrepancies were noted with regard to the data submitted. And the report from the AG sets out the discrepancies that were brought to the attention of Servcon and Intersight. That was on the 16th of October 2008. These, Chair, are quite considerable discrepancies. I don't think it's relevant that the former DG should go into explaining that, because clearly he wasn't responsible for that. We just note that there were serious discrepancies that were observed. What I want to establish, though, is whether the Department of Public Works put Servcon and Intersight on terms, as it were. Were they given a stipulated time frame in which they had to address these, and what were were their penalties, as it were, attached? What was the response of the Department of Public Works?
Chairperson, the meeting, it's a pity again, I don't have those documents because the chair said to discuss the original report in a later stage. But my recollection as well is that there were, if I'm not mistaken, a number of regions involved in the implementation of the project. And at the meeting of October, or at that meeting in October, three regions had certified the work. Three or four regions. The other regions were busy doing that. And we were saying those regions that had noticed, and it was in writing, confirmed by departmental officials in those regions. I remember when we were doing this, I did get copies of the confirmation letters. It's unfortunate I don't have one here. But yes, the agreement with me and the CEO was at no stage that they must just go and attend to those discrepancies. Thank you, Chair.
And then, Chair, after all of these meetings and all of this correspondence, which took place largely during October 2008, then in December 2008, Intersight charged interest of $335,000 on the overdue account. I still want to know how come they charged interest on an account which was overdue, despite having been told, presumably, that they were now on terms. I cannot begin to understand how you can charge an overdue account following all of these developments.
Chair, we did indicate that the issue of interest will not be handled, and I think in that meeting I was also invited, and they agreed not to do that. They submitted the overcharged account. We were really mad and we said, you are not within the ambit of the service level agreement. Therefore,
okay.
This one...
Thank you. So you had a meeting at which an agreement was reached. Is there any documentation to that?
Yes, we said in the service level agreement, it does not say you will charge interest. Therefore, your request to submit for payment of interest is not in the service level agreement. We reminded them.
I hope they did not say at the same time, we did not say we will not charge.
No.
Sure.
Chairperson, I'm saying we had a service level agreement, and in it, it did not capture what the other agreements do. The other agreements, they say there shall be an escalation at such and such a percentage, and I signed it. This one did not have that. So they had no basis to submit even that request in terms of the service level agreement. So we dismissed it on that. They could not prove to us that we allowed them to submit that. So the onus was on them to come back and prove. And I'm sure clearly they know they could not do it.
Final question, Chair. The former DG has already admitted to us that he motivated for ServCon to be employed to perform this function on behalf of Public Works. That is correct.
The presentation I made motivated for both ServCon
and Intersite.
And the presentation was made by myself, having prepared it with officials.
That we've already established, Chair. Now, a year later, remember the SLA was adopted in 2007, December, it's now December 2008. The former DG looks at the results and quite clearly there's non-performance. There are major discrepancies. How does he feel about his recommendation of these companies to perform this task, and a year later they are manifestly failing to perform? What does that make of his recommendation?
The work they performed for the reporting financial year was within the annexure of the SLA. The work they performed, which only required certification on the part of officials, was within the number that was set aside for financial year 2007/8.
Yet every regional office of, well, not every, but 6 out of the 9 provinces reported major discrepancies and could not, in fact, verify that data.
Chairperson, we have letters. We have letters, I think, dated August of 2008, where they verified. It was only later where things were changed, and I don't know where that comes from. But I do have copies of
data, Chair, August, September, October, 2 months later, the regions were not in a position to verify and in fact reported massive discrepancies. That didn't just happen in 2 months.
It's a pity I don't have that copy with me, Chair. But to be honest, we were arguing between what they did and what the officials could certify. And they were adamant they performed. In fact, they overperformed. But the officials were saying, the work you did, you missed out on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And they were allowed 6 months, by the way, Chairperson. The chief operating officer himself decided to stall the matter, and it was stalled for 6 months. So I think the performance must only start, and it was very clear. He said, I'm stalling the process, and I'll come back to you. So I think there was 6 months left, and it was in writing. Chair.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable.
I suppose the key question that Steele was raising on this aspect was around the fact that the initial recommendation was based on capacity and capability, but the product, the end product, did not seem to confirm those capabilities. And I think it raises the questions around did you underestimate, was the work to be done underestimated, or were their capabilities overestimated, or what? I think that is, for me, out of all that has been said in that section, that is what sticks out.
Chairperson, in terms of the agreement, they did not underperform.
the only administrative part was whether or not what they said they did was certifiable, but they did not underperform.
Well, if it's not certifiable, what is the implication?
It's where they engage each other, and they say these are the things you're supposed to do. It's an administrative process that occurs even where you have appointed private consent. And even in construction, I know they have a retainer, they have all those things. Where you look at snacks, and the snacks, the people who provide the service will come and say, but we did, and these are the guidelines we follow. That discussion was between inter-site people, and in terms of the figures and what they said they were supposed to do, they did overperform. The other was administrative. So when you look at whether there's performance or underperformance, you look at it in that context. However, what also was very clear from the COO at that time was stalling the processes. He indicated to them, you performed, we are looking at snacks, but do not go on and do the other work until we come back and say, go and finish your work. So that was very clear.
I suppose snacks talks to the quality of the work. I'm sure snags would talk to the quality of the work.
Yes, sir. And the officials came and said they
That's exactly my question, that the quality of their work was in question.
Yes.
Which would belie the assumption that they have the capability and the capacity.
Okay. Chairperson, like I said, I don't have the figures here. I do have copies of the three regions and the work that was certified. But I know in terms of the quantification of the SLA, I wanted to check whether they were within. At that time, they had performed. And it was certified.
I'm
not talking about not certified work. I'm talking about work that was certified.
Oh, all right. Okay. Thank you very much, Comrade Chiluan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Maroka, I'll be...
Moroka.
My apology, Mr. Moroka. My focus areas will be in the disclosure of financial interest by the former Director General. We'll start with the Chapter 3 of the Public Service Regulation. Stipulates in Regulation C that every designated employee shall, within the applicable time frame, disclose to the relevant executive authority on the appropriate forms particulars of all of his or her registrable interest for the relevant year in question. For the year 2007 and 2008, the former DG declared his directorship of the Servcon Pty Ltd. According to the CIPRO database, in which a search was conducted by the AG on the 23rd of January 2009, the former DG had financial interest in Omega Process Server, which was not declared on the financial disclosure forms for 2007 and 2008. If we could establish why Mr. Moroka did not declare his interest.
Chairperson, the disclosure in Omega Process Servers was only, I became aware of it during the investigations together with the Office of the Auditor General. Actually, they brought it to my attention that I'm still a director of that company. And what I then did, and also provided them with a copy from the people of Omega, that what happened to my CM29 forms that were done, I think in 2005 or 6, to resign from it. Because it was done then. And they had to apologize and they put the blameworthiness on them. Because I also insisted that it must be done. I was not aware at that time that they had not submitted my CM29 forms. At Tubelisha, at CEFCON, all those things are done by the company secretary and we depend on them. You don't personally go there, you issue that. So we then ensured that that was done. As soon as I became aware. I only became aware at that time. And I think 2 or 3 years went by without me being aware that I'm still listed. I had no engagements whatsoever with that company except sometime in 2005. Thank you.
Okay.
So in other words, Mr. Morok, you don't have any recollection of being an active member of this company, or you didn't write the resignation, or it was not processed in a proper way by them.
Yes, we parted ways somewhere, according to my recollection at that time, and it was captured in their letter. We parted ways somewhere towards end of December 2005 or December 2006. I had written to them to say I'm resigning, and I had depended on them to submit the CM. I in fact signed the CM29 forms, because I remember I was in Cape Town. The gentleman came over to meet me here, and that was done. And I forgot about it. It is only later where he said there was a mix-up at his office and he will do it immediately. But from that time of my resignation to the time when it was made, I was made aware by the Auditor General, I had no clue that I'm still on that. And there was absolutely no engagement. Even when there were engagement, it was not myself personally being involved. It was my sister-in-law at some point in time working for them.
In that view, even if when you were a director at the CEFCOM, you didn't even in any way mention that you are declaring Omega to CEFCOM.
Yes, I didn't know. Yes. No. What do you mean, that, Chair?
I'm saying, even if you don't remember, you parted ways with them a long time ago, then to Omega, you didn't tell them about CEFCOM, the relationship between the two companies.
At CEFCOM, how we're doing investigation around members when we went to the bank, because at that time I think CEFCOM was owned by both banks and government. The company secretary would take our IDs and go to CIPRO and get the details of membership. And we were to say yes, no, yes, no. At that time there was nothing in terms of that form.
Okay.
There's a list they write, Chairperson, a long list they do. And then they ask you individually in a board meeting. We don't do it. So at that time they said, I don't have, it was not indicated to me. It was only picked up by the Auditor General.
Okay.
Then let's
from CIPRO.
So what happens? The company secretary, Mr. Francis Collins, would go and use your ID to check whether you...
No, I understand. I'm saying the Auditor General picked it up from CIPRO.
The Auditor General picked it up from CIPRO and made me aware at that time.
The company secretary couldn't.
He couldn't 2 years before, because I think that was done 2 years before.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's now come to the businesses of CEFCOM. According to CEFCOM annual report for the period year ended 31st March 2007, you were the, I don't know, MD or CEO of CEFCOM from 8 years, October 2002. I think you mentioned it even in your presentation, to 31st March 2007. For the period ended 31st March 2008, you were still on CEFCOM's board of directors and chaired the room Narration and Finance Committee. In a letter from CEFCOM dated 11th December 2008, the Board of Directors approved an incentive of 215,000 to the chairs of board of subcommittees, including you, Mr. Morocco. This was based on the performance, which directly influenced the company's general performance. Section 31 of the Public Service Act states that no employee shall perform or engage himself or herself to perform remunerative work outside his or her employment in a relevant department, except with a written permission of the executive authority of the department. Did you have the written permission from the executive authority?
Chairperson, it was reported in my report categorically that I had absolutely no prior knowledge
about the money that was paid into my account and for those services. I was not part of the group that decided, and I had no prior knowledge. When I became aware about the 215,000, I also had a letter and I called my DDG to explain to him what transpired, and the letter is very clear about what transpired in terms of that. For an example, we also had to engage them to see if they say general performance. At that stage, it also did not even include work done by CEFCON on behalf of public works because they were not even paid. At parastatals, they don't pay you for work not performed. So that's why I'm saying there were no linkages to the two. However, on the 31st of March, in terms of our processes as established in terms of the TFMA, like I've been doing all these years, I submitted the disclosure of the money together with my financial disclosure. But because this was known around the 30th of January, and I also had discussions with the minister, and the minister was saying, you can have now the current minister. We'll be guided by the AG and everything. It was like, no, there's PSC to interpret for us, minister, whether I contravene Section 31.1. PSC never came to the party because they said, we will be guided by you disclosing. And on the 31st of March, 2 days before my departure, it was disclosed. So, Section 31 also says, if you have prior knowledge that you are going to get remuneration, you need to seek permission. So there was no need for me to seek any permission because I did not know about this.
Through you did not know, but you were the chairperson of this committee, the Remuneration and Finance Committee.
Yes, sorry, Chair. I am the chairperson of the Remuneration Committee for officials at management level. That's what I am. Not for board members. It's very clear. Not for board members.
No.
The chairpersonship that is here is for officials. I have never evaluated any board member except for.
No, I'm responding to what you are saying. Probably maybe it's my own misunderstanding of the issues. Maybe I didn't understand. But
no.
I wanted to say then. You have been you are a managing director or a CEO.
It's the same.
It's the same.
Yeah.
Okay, both caps. You have been in that office for a period of 5 years.
That's correct.
And one will just want to check an entity or an organization that operates within will have a policy, especially policy on incentives. So you didn't know about this incentive policy because, you know, one fails to understand in terms of if you didn't know, you didn't chair, as you have just alluded now, that you didn't chair that committee,
No, I'm not chairing the committee that evaluates
I've understood you correctly, yes. Mr. Maruka.
Yes. Secondly, the committee that
I was still on the floor. I'm saying now, this policy, when does this policy of paying incentives to board members was established? When was it established? Or you did not have any knowledge about it?
Chairperson, one, I am the chairperson of the Remuneration Committee that did only officials at a particular level. And even the decisions of the Remuneration Committee were only sent as recommendations to the board for endorsement. Two, I did not participate in any policy that afforded an opportunity to recognize directors.
So there was no policy?
No, there might be a policy, but it's not.
Okay, there was no policy.
I'm not aware whether there's a policy or not, but I'm not party to that. That's number one.
No, let's do it like this, Dr. Morok. You were the managing director of CEFCON.
Oh, there's a policy?
Yes, I understand. What I'm saying is that at your level, you would know most of the stuff. Now the question that she's asking is whether at the time when you were the MG, because beyond that you became chairperson of a subcommittee, you were not aware of any policy that related to the remuneration of directors.
There's a policy that came, that flew from the previous regime at CEFCON, and it had basis of how you do it. But in all meetings I was, even as a director, because I used to sit even in meetings of camera, I don't recall where it was discussed about that. I think it was at shareholder level or something. I need to check on that.
All right.
Secondly, check. I was not the only official at that time from the department. There were two of us, and we both did not know. And we both demanded the letters. We only saw the amount. That is why we invested the amount. We never used the amount.
Okay.
Yes.
And then, interest, you invested the money back to the company or on your own personal?
Yes. No, the money is invested in money market.
Okay.
Yes, even now.
you continue but to chair the board subcommittees on this remuneration and finance subcommittee.
Up until the time I was there?
Yeah, up until the time you were there, which is the body that will decide on incentives.
The last time I was there, it was a long time, Chair. I will have to check the last meeting. I'm not sure about the last meeting.
So actually, you stated categorically that you didn't know about this incentive that was going to be paid, even though you were still sitting in that
for director. It was never discussed. It was not the place to discuss it.
Who would have taken that decision?
It can be the chairperson together with the shareholder.
Which is government.
The shareholder being government, the Department of Housing.
The
Department of Housing.
So the DG of Housing would know.
The
or will
DG
it be
of
the
Housing
minister?
Would know, so they know. I that's what I assume. But that's the reason why we asked for a letter explaining. That's the reason.
What did they say in the explanation?
Sorry, sir?
What did they say in their explanation?
Oh, I don't have it. The department has that, sir.
You don't remember
so
what they
the
said?
So does the Auditor General. The Auditor General's office has that.
You don't remember what they said?
Because the reason why it was given to the Auditor General, it was that's for the general function as captured. They just paraphrased it for general functions, but it had nothing to do with public works. Because there was no performance.
All right. Okay. That's fine.
Chair, with your permission, maybe if the department could also maybe provide us with the
copy of that letter.
Yeah, it's with the Auditor General.
No. It's with the department.
Oh.
I'm making an assumption that whatever is sent to the Auditor General was a copy. Isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
A copy,
so
because it's attached with the financial disclosure forms that were submitted on the 31st of March. Yes, they do have.
No, that's fine. Yeah, so we'll take it from the department. Yes, Comrade.
Chairperson, on page 17 of the CEFCON annual report. The report of the director states that
which year 2007?
2009.
Page 17.
On the role and function of the board and committees, it says that to date no formal evaluation of board performances have taken place. You know, when you see this slide, you just page 17 on the role and functions of the board.
The last sentence.
The last sentence.
Yeah.
You know, you'll just ask yourself, how did they arrive, or how did the board arrived on what is called incentives, even though you didn't have any knowledge. But it's just a question that, you know, it will revolve around in the back of my mind. But then how did they arrive to pay out that money, those 216,000, which you eventually didn't have any knowledge of it?
Well, I suppose, Comrade,
it has to be answered by that.
Once we see that letter from whoever would have written it, they can better explain to us what happened. I'm sure you would have the CASA situation where these things happen for no reason.
Chairperson, I think that will be my two. There will be the two last questions, I think.
Okay.
In terms of the Treasury Regulation 15A8, 16A8, Treasury Regulations. Any role player who has any business interest in a contract to be awarded must A, disclose that interest, and B, withdraw from participating in any manner whatsoever in the process relating to that contract. If the former DG not perceive any conflict of interest from his continuing to serve on the board of Servcon, his immediate task employer. 5 years.
Chair, this was a state-owned entity. A policy decision was taken by MINMAC. My status in Servcon was known even in that meeting.
I
have not received any remuneration from Servcon other than that one of the 215,000. There was a stage where a query was handled by Mr. Vukela about an extended payment into the month of April 2007 whilst I was in the employ of the department. And it was explained to PSA what happened. The Minister of Housing forced me to go and work for a month to finalize outstanding work at the two institutions I was working for. Save for that one of incentive, my work was known. I've not been paid anything from that institution, and there was absolutely no conflict of interest.
So,
for an example, when we give work, we had a CFO who sits on our IDT, and when decisions are made, he's part of those decisions to transfer funds to IDT. There's never been a conflict of interest. And there are other many examples. Yes, thank you, Chair. So there was absolutely no conflict. It was not a private concern.
I see.
Can I say something, Chair, which is not captured here? The internal audit committee person who was in the department, I think that's where it emanated. And that's why I wanted to explain some of this. Interestingly, around July of 2008, I was called by Minister Topotitiza to come and account here. This thing, sorry, Chair, my language. The English is fading.
Right.
So I need to express myself in my language.
Okay.
Said to me, you said you are a director of Servcon when we were handling this issue, and that Servcon is 100% state-owned. However, the CIPRO investigation indicated that it's a private company, and you are the director. I had to clarify that. So this whole thing about issue of tender, whether it's what, there was that lull, and it was resolved finally by the minister around September. That this is 100% state-owned entity and it's not a private concern. However, in the report of the Auditor General, they've always referred to the work or the policy decision making to give them work as if it's a tender. It was not a tender. Hence, I did not have any withdrawal. And in the presentation, I was going to indicate the steps.
And you indicate that you continue to serve Servcon because the Minister of Public Works, Tokotitiza, and the Minister of Housing, Lindi Wasulu, had both agreed that it should continue. Sir.
Yes, it came in this form, Chair, because I was appointed on the 1st of November 2002. She asked me not to resign and to continue. That is why, even when the Auditor General was trying to get a letter of whether or not I'm on the Servcon board and anything, they got a letter that says your name is not listed. Unfortunately, when the appointment of the new board was done, it was done on the 4th of October, 2006. And the reason my name was either scratched there or it was not there, because the copy I have, my name is there. I was already a managing director of Servcon at that time. And I think that agreement went all over to May or August of 2007.
Was it in writing? Or it was
yes.
A letter from...
The memo from the minister confirming board members, it is definitely in writing. And at that time, I was the managing director of Servcon. So I was not even with Public Works.
No. I'm talking about...
Oh, the discussion.
No. You continued serving in Servcon after you became DG.
Well, yes, I think so. I'll have to find that one.
I will have
to go and look for it, but as far as I know, they discussed it. Issues. I'll find it.
Yeah, no. My question goes beyond their discussion. Was there any formal confirmation from
either that we agree that Morocco should continue serving, or it was just discussed and there was a ladies' agreement. But
that's what I'm saying, Chairperson. I will have to go and look on that one.
But I see. The
However, what I do know for a fact, Chair, is that every attendance of my meetings to the establishment of the Housing Development Agency, which document of thereof was articulated by myself, I was invited as Director of CERFCON by Minister of Housing, not as Director General.
No, I understand this. I'm sure it goes back to the question of formalization of processes.
Yes, I do have that.
So that things are confirmed, things are stated. And I do see that according to the Auditor General, they could not be supplied with that formal confirmation, either from the Minister of Housing or the Minister of Public Works. But if what is that?
This is a memo nominating the members to serve on that board.
When you were already DG of Public Works.
No, not when I was.
No.
What I mean is, Chairperson, let me explain something. The reason why when we did the presentation to MINMEC about motivating for CERFCON, it was known by the Minister that I was still Director of the state-owned entity.
No, I understand. I was saying that when you became DG, I assume it did not become automatic that you will retain all the positions you had elsewhere. They had to be reconfirmed.
Yes.
So I was checking whether there is any formal confirmation or not. I think that is which you say you would look for.
I had to look for it, Chair, but because it was not only for CERFCON, it was for both CERFCON and Tbilisi.
And Tbilisi.
Because I was doing the transformation. The reason why she asked me to stay is because the establishment of the Housing Development Act, that entire document in its entirety was drafted by myself. And I had to later add a guy called Anton Arendse and Tate Sipho Mashinini, who is now the CEO of... Now, at the time of me being appointed Public Works DG, I had not completed the tasks that were at CERFCON in terms of that, because CERFCON was meant to close. Tbilisi was meant to close and be dovetailed into the Housing Development Agency. In fact, even when I was recruited to come to Public Works, because I would not have gone to Public Works, I was advised by both ministers that when that happens, CERFCON will be closed and you will be out of employment. I did not know they would be still there, because the salary that I was earning even at that time from both entities could in no way have allowed me to come to Public Works. So that I'm trying to say it is in writing, and I do know for a fact. I will go and try and find it where the minister confirmed that I must continue finalizing the transformation process within those two entities, either through the form of the DG or the minister. I'll find it.
All right, Comrade Chila. Just want Chila to round off.
I'm round. It's just a follow up when the former DG says there was no conflict of interest, but you know as a legal person, I think you'll understand to where I'm coming from. You see, CERFCON was your immediate past employer. And, you know, there was this performance which was done by the AG on public service or officials who are doing business with government or entities. And when they were doing this report, I think in your case, it's a question of whether a directorship can be regarded as a remunerative work or to get incentive. But it says really, employees should not participate in any activity that represents conflict of interest. And as such, the matter of deriving an interest from directorship, serving on a board, that will form part of the conflict interest under the review. It's just a note that I took from the AG's report when I was doing the preparation in terms of this hearing today. I was trying to link. But, you know, I can't understand it better if then you say there's no conflict of interest. As a legal person, there's no conflict of interest. While you were an MD of Servcon, really, I would like to be convinced in that. Not legally so, because I might not understand you, but just...
There is none, Chair. There is no conflict of interest. And there can be other elaboration. There is absolutely none. That's the Auditor General's report. It's not a legal document. Thank you, Chair. It does not have the legal interpretation.
Okay. All right.
Okay, Chairperson. Thank you very much for the opportunity given to participate in this hearing.
Thank you very much. I'm trying to check follow up so that we close. Yeah, we all speak at once, and they will all be responded to at once, and then we'll just check one or two things. Pretoria, Steel, Singh, Hosh, Memangena, and then Malade. You will close it as you opened it. Okay.
I mean, it's written here in black and white on page 20. Servcon's annual report for the period ended 31 March 2007 indicated that Mr. Moroka, the DG of DPW, was the managing director or CEO of Servcon from 30 October 2002. He started on the 1st of November 2002. By that time, he knew very well that he was supposed to disclose, and he never did that. Now, the other thing that worries me is the issue of the incentive amounting to 161,260 that he discovered that it was in his own bank account. Instead, he transferred it into a
money market,
into the money market. Chairperson,
you don't have a money market account.
You're not your money market account. Chairperson, what worries me is this. Last year, I got 209,000 from one company.
You?
That I was the managing director. But knowing that I wasn't entitled to receive that. When I went to them and they told me how the money came into my account, I went to the bank, I asked, I didn't even take it to the money market account because as it is now, the 161,000, $250 is busy making some small calves, some calves, in a man. You see? So the calves are not for Servcon. They are going to be Mr. Moroka's calves. And really, it's not fair. If Mr. Moroka was fair, and he knew that really he was no more on the payroll of Servcon, he should have taken that money back. And I wonder, Mr. Moroka, if you are sleeping with you, what do you really dream about? The money that is in the money market account making interest for me when I'm supposed to have taken it back? Really, is it fair? Thank you.
All right. No, let's do this. No, wait.
I must write it down.
No, wait, let's do this. I think, Memangen, my understanding from what you said is that that was given to all directors. Yeah.
For work done. That's correct.
No, we're going to get the letter that the Servcon people wrote to explain why and how they gave that amount. Pretorius, Steel, Singh, Hush, Malad. Please, let's wrap it up.
Chairperson, am I not supposed to? I'm not comfortable with the comment from Honorable Member that how do I sleep? Or should I ignore that?
No, please. Don't take it.
I don't have a question. I just simply want to make a comment at the end. Perhaps if I can pass my opportunity now, just give me a chance for 1 second at the end. Just an observation.
No, I want to give it to you now.
Thank you. I'll take it then. Servcon is not before us at the moment, so my observation was really about Servcon and the salaries paid to the current executive of Servcon. The current executive receives an enormous amount of money, 2.2 million rand, plus a performance bonus of more than a million rand. Plus, and this is the point I wanted to make, he received a retention bonus of 1.15 million last year. That's why this company while this 100% state entity was being wound up, and by the end of March 2010, this entity should have been closed down. So my question is, I don't know, somebody must answer this, if now, not some, perhaps later on. How can you pay a retention bonus to somebody while you know that the group is going to close down? What, retaining for what?
I think I can answer that because it was anyway during my time as a director. The company was meant to close firstly on the 1st of November 2004 by the then partners. And then a policy was developed to say every time you are told you are going to close, you then pay insurance for retainer. And the retention was built. And then 2006, 31 March, was the first period where the company was supposed now to be officially closed in terms of having concluded the work with banks. And the payments for retainer were paid for that ending period. But because the work went over, the policy was re-entered again from 1 April 2006 to another period, I think, in 2007, and so on. So in other words, there is a policy within the company that every time you are told you are going to close, there is money that will be contributed to insurance called retainer. As to the salary, chair is progression. It's progressively made over a number of years in terms of the performance. You will recall, Chair, that CEFCON was not funded by Treasury from the 1st of April 2006. It was self-funding because the work CEFCON does today, no other person will be doing it once it's closed. Hence, it was able to generate its own income because when we presented to Treasury, Treasury had said, find a model to do the work, but National Department of Housing will not pay. So the discussions around how they are paid and everything is premised on that. The only time CEFCON was then given money from state was when they were asked to stop performing the work that was generating money, therefore shifting the implication to state. And I think the viewing of whether or not there's bonuses or anything, it's like that. My salary when I left CEFCON in 2007 was 1.420 million from CEFCON. And the same from the other side.
Right. Steve?
Thank you, Chair. I'm referring to the CERVCON report and the one that the Honourable Member quoted from, page 44. This details the director's emoluments, performance bonus for the executive director and the non-executive director's incentives. Chair, it's quite clear from these amounts, 220, 215, 200, that there's an element of gradation that is being applied here. In other words, these are not blanket incentives simply to all board members. The fact that they are slightly different suggests to me that there has been an assessment that has been conducted, and therefore the value has been determined according to some kind of assessment. I don't believe that we should be asking Mr. Morocco to answer this question, but I do believe that we as SCOPA can approach the board of CERVCON and ask them to indicate who conducted this assessment and on what basis this assessment was made. Because my concern, Chair, is that if no assessment was made as to the value that was received by these directors, we then have R1 million of wasteful and fruitless expenditure to look at in another state entity, and if there was an assessment, then they can tell us on what this basis, you know, what, how they actually assessed the value to the board. So could I please ask that our secretariat be directed to approach the chairperson of that board to find out on what basis an assessment was made of that. And secondly, Chair, I have a question for the acting DG, and it relates to the paragraph that Mr. Maruk has already quoted from, and that is from the AG's recommendations, page 4 of the AG's report, which says the minister should address the following, and it has points A to I of all the points that the AG recommends that the minister should address, and it concludes 1.4.2 of page 4, based on the outcome of the above, the minister should assess the significance of the non-compliance with the PFMA and other relevant prescripts. My question for the acting DG chair is, how has the minister assessed the significance of this non-compliance and what actions, if the acting DG can tell us, what actions has the minister taken in terms of that assessment?
All right, thank you. Okay, you come last.
Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, I know you've asked for a copy of the minutes, the MINMEC minutes. I'll be very interested to see in those minutes if there was recorded the direct interest that Mr. Morocco has in CERFCON at that meeting. Was it officially recorded in the minutes of the meeting that Mr. Morocco, I know you did say that people knew, but people knew is, for me, is not good enough. Was it recorded in those minutes as official that Mr. Morocco had an interest in CERFCON, because the issue of CERFCON surfaced on the table? That's one. Secondly, Chairperson, I just want our members to take note on the CERFCON report. You know, we can hide behind the fact that CERFCON is a state-owned entity, and so what? It doesn't mean it's above board. But if you have to look on page 43, and the related parties in which the directors of CERFCON had an interest in, this is the first time I've seen five directors or so have interest in about 50 or 60 companies. You know, we'd like to also check whether CERFCON was outsourcing its work or CERFCON just stood there in name. And last point, Chairperson, is that there have been a number of issues that where the Auditor General's report has been referred to. And I was just wondering whether we as a committee at some stage will have an opportunity to interact with the Office of the Auditor General and clear out some of these outstanding issues before we do our final report. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm just concerned on this thing of Treasury regulations, Chairperson, vis-a-vis the status of former DG who made presentation to himself to advise MINMEC. Isn't it? He made presentation from, you know, CERFCON to himself as a DG, who then later then advised the MINMEC to say, I don't know of them, that they've got the capacity, they've got resources, that they can run this thing. But he then explained it to say, there's no relation to what we are talking about. Can we get this thing clear, Chairperson? Because keeping on asking things that are very clear, that are turning us to become, you know, joke. While we understand that the law does not allow him, we don't even have to ask him. At some stage, we should put it to him that, in fact, he contravened that particular portion of the law.
Malad?
I would like to request Mr. Morocco to supply to the committee the affidavits he claimed to have obtained from members of MINMEC at the time, inclusive of the memorandum where it has been approved that he must serve on the CERFCON board. And the question that I would like to ask him is to, at the moment, how, sir, do you regard this amount of 215,000 rands? Do you look at it as a gift or as a performance bonus for the work you have done during your tenure as a non-executive you know, board member? That would be the first question that I would like him to clarify. Nothing, but that is enough.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Morocco. You can just concisely.
Yes, I'll be very precise.
Sure.
Chair, the presentation to Interside, because the presentation by CERFCON and Interside, before it was made, they had already indicated that they are willing to perform at 1,596. There was an engagement. So it was not a presentation made to me, but a presentation that was informed about their capacities and capability, and the presentation indicates that. The listing on page 43, I earlier said the company secretary would do that and would do this random. That is why I was explaining why I could not pick up in the report whether I'm still at Omega or not.
I was just making an observation.
Yes, yes. So I'm just saying This one is not. The, I think it's now the minutes. What are the questions? In the meantime, the 215,000 rand, whilst I'm at it, it was articulated in that letter, which I don't have now, that it was for performance, for general work that was done. So that, and I thought the committee would be able to get an explanation.
No, sir, just because it is
not a gift.
Yeah, it's in your account now and benefiting you.
Oh,
now, do you regard it as a gift or as a bonus for a performance?
Yes, it has always been clear. I received, and according to the explanation, for work done together with the other members, for work done, a cash incentive. So if they attribute it, it's a pity we are speculating here, Chair. They will have to explain what it was for.
No, in the report it is mentioned as a performance bonus in this report.
Well, like I said.
Do you accept as such?
Like I said, Chairperson, my take on it is the chairperson of the board, together with the shareholder, they have a process assessment and they will indicate how it came about.
You said Servcon had money, but in your own report on page 15, you said that they had financial constraints.
Servcon had money? Yes, Servcon had money.
Yeah, just said 15.
Yes.
The last paragraph there.
Yeah.
Of your own
the constraints that came about at Servcon, I thought I reported it, when the department said, because you are being transformed, stop doing what you are doing. Therefore, they could not continue incurring. But that was long before the directive of Minmec. Long after. Sorry, Chair.
All right. I want us to bring this to a close. It has taken much, much longer than our initial 30-45 minutes engagement.
I also left.
Sorry about that. We've also missed our lunch. But we still have a briefing here. Mr. Fugel, in terms of the recommendation from the AG, where are we? Have we paid the 73 million? And where are we in terms of sorting out the discrepancies that are there? And what is the status of the totality of the contract that you had with the entity? Can you set this mic off, Mr. Morocco?
Thanks, Chair. Based on the verifications that we are busy on, we have already paid 10.4, which could constitute 7.6 to Servcon and 2.8 to Intersite. Also, to respond to the question that has been raised as to what we are doing, are we doing with respect to the AG's report? There are few areas that we want to satisfy ourselves so that we should close this matter properly. We have already written a letter to Servcon to request certain clarities. Once we receive those clarities, we'll be able to finalize this matter based on the information that we're going to receive. So we are just waiting for that correspondence from Servcon. Once we receive it, we'll be able to conclude on it. Thanks very much.
All right, Mr. Morocco, thank you very much for your time. It has been a much livelier engagement than we had sincerely anticipated. Very, very sincerely anticipated. And like I said, you've clarified your position. We now understand where you stand on all of these issues. But that notwithstanding, we'll still, in the normal course of our work, be able to, in writing our report, make recommendations based on our understanding and the clarifications that you have given.
Chairperson, can I ask a technical question?
Sure.
The fact that I came here and I attended to some of the Public Works Department issues and all of that has a huge financial implication on me. Do I prepare the claim and give it to the Director General of Public Works? Because the information was not there. And that information has to be clarified. Collecting the affidavits that are now being asked, the plane, the hotel, I need, because I don't want them to sit and say, hang on, I asked the meeting because I wanted to clarify some of the things, and Scopa can say. If Scopa says it's your own doing, chief, it's got nothing to do with the department, that's fine. But I need it so that tomorrow they don't say anything. But what I, as far as I'm concerned, I came here to present something that occurred during my time as Director General of Public Services. And I answered a lot of questions that related to that. But otherwise, I am humbled again, Chair, by giving an opportunity to come and present my side of the story. And I hope, Chair, there will become another time, irrespective of how it comes out. All these technical aspects that will be coming from the Auditor General and so forth, that came post my period, I need to be informed accordingly in terms of that. Even the recommendations you asked, Mr. Bukela, those recommendations were there 4 months before my departure. Work could have been done even that time before my departure. For an example, I also continue to say, even if I had transgressed any of the processes, Minister of Public Works would have suspended me, subjected me to disciplinary processes in terms of PFMA and everything, so that I answer and you have a better view of that. I think that process was not done. I'm a year out of that department. I have not interacted with that department in that period. And I don't think I'm going to do that in the next time. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Thank you very much. I think on the substantive question that you have asked, I think we would want to still leave it as your private endeavor to be here. If you had come with the department when it came, like with the CGE, we had said all those former CEOs and chairpersons who were coming with the current leadership must be paid for by the CGE. But this was a special arrangement. Even calling the department to come, it was just to make sure that they don't think we're discussing things behind their back, so they can be clear about what you said about what happened in the department. They shouldn't come back and say, no, we hear on SABC that Mr. Morocco said 1, 2, 3 about us, want to come and clear our names as well. And so we have this toing and froing. But thank you very much. And I want to assure Mr. Morocco that from the committee side, there are no motives other than what we're engaging with here. Its robustness is just but a part of our way of doing things. Otherwise, we don't believe that you are wrong. Nor do we believe that you are right. We still come to that position in the normal course of our way. Thank you very much. Comrades, our time is really injured. But we need to do this because Pramesh and his large team have been very patient. We sincerely thought this would take us 45 minutes. That's how we planned it. So the comfort break will be when the department in Mr. Morocco leave. So you can stand up, stretch, and the SABC and the independent newspapers leave us. And don't be talk to those people down.